This is HPR episode 2252 entitled HPR New Year Show episode 6. It is hosted by various hosts and is about 173 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is Hacker Public Radio New Year's Eve Show episode 6.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Interesting thought. I don't know. These boards have gotten so cheap that you kind of even wonder what the value of them even is.
Maybe which boards?
I mean, you know, you get Raspberry Pi Zero for $5. How many boards can you buy that are under, you know, $10 or $20?
Oh yeah, that's true. That's sort of the thing now to get. Sort of started with the Raspberry Pi, I guess, but it wasn't the only thing. And then I assume this chip that I was talking about earlier, that sort of goes under this as well. And I suppose the Pine 64 as well. All these, and the onion board that somebody mentioned earlier, there's various boards that are what are they called? Small SBCs, aren't they called? What did I get? There's a term for them. But yeah, there's all these various boards that are cheap and small.
Got a pocket chip over here I've been wanting to plug up and play with. It's been sitting up here for quite a while. I haven't taken it out of its box.
Well, you haven't actually got it out of the box yet, pocket chip.
Yeah, I've got a pocket chip over here, and it's just a little chip. What do they call it? A little $9 computer?
Yeah, the chip was just a small $9 computer or whatever, and then the pocket chip was like a case thing, and also with the software being slightly different, that's on there by default.
It's kind of like the little laptop, current laptop.
Yeah, it's like a small, it's just a small Debian ARM device, basically, with their own little keyboard and their own screen, and there's two things here. So the pocket chip has the casing and the keyboard and screen, and then the chip is inside the pocket chip as well, but then you have this chip separately as well.
Yeah, I think mine's just the chip.
The chip was like $9 or whatever, and then the pocket chip was a bit more.
Yeah, it's a little, like a little handheld little gaming thing.
I'm not sure about gaming quite on it, but I guess I haven't installed that much on the VH to be able to play games on there as well. I think it can run all the, pretty much every program that's gone on ARM to Debian, it should be able to run that, as far as I know. But yeah, you can buy them on their website now as well.
I guess with 3D printers, little cases and stuff probably start coming out with all sorts of things that you can do.
Although the touchscreen on the pocket chip is a bit different from, it's different from your standard sort of mobile phone, tablet touchscreens. But even so, it's reasonable for what it is, but it's like a cheaper touchscreen, some sort of different version, I think.
I'll tell you what they need to do. They used to have this thing called the Palm TX. It was a little device with I'm going to say it had probably 800 by 600 or better. Very bright backlit display. It was very thin. Touch screen on it. Very, very thin. It had a little, very, very small controller on the back of it. It was a nice unit. And we had those for a while here. And I bought a bunch of replacement screens, thinking we were going to have them
Which
for
one?
Years. It's called Palm TX. It was just a little handheld computer, very nice display, full-color touchscreen. And I bought replacement screens with the digitizer and the whole nine yards. I'd say I paid less than $10 per screen. I think I bought, 10 or 20 of them. They're in a box in the garage somewhere. And if I could figure out a way to hook that up to one of these little arm boards, man, that would be cool, because they're just like the phone displays that you have today. I mean, you know, or a small tablet or phone, but they're really cheap. I think you can probably still buy them probably inexpensive like that with the full digitizer and everything. I just don't know how you would interface the two. They were quite nice. They are quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that one, but yeah, some of the old tech is still good as well. But we've got so much now in general that it's just, you know. But I do think that crowdfunding is the place to look at for more exciting tech, because there's a lot of, every now and again you get some sort of interesting thing that's trying to get crowdfunded, and I think that. And you have to probably buy it from China directly, or Hong Kong or somewhere. But I think retail, what you can just buy in the normal shop or store, as you would say, there is not really that exciting in general, or usually not. You have to go online and find something that's more interesting on crowdfunding or somewhere like that these days.
I see so many of these little Odoroid touchscreens and stuff, and they sell for quite a bit of money. I wonder why.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to copy a link over. Take me just a second, because I surf on one computer and I'm talking on a computer that's disjointed.
Officially, this ends in about 10 minutes, I think. And then if they put the app to show up or not, or that comes out later or whatever, that depends, I think. It'll do it if people are still chatting as well. Who else? Anybody else here?
Yeah, I just posted a link. One of these little TX's units online sells for $20, including cover and charger and everything.
Okay, I'll look at that.
Yeah, it's really, these are really beautiful screens with digitizers. And as I said, I bought a whole pile of them for just the screen and digitizer, brand new, you know, from China, for like less than $10 a piece. And I just don't understand. They're full VGA. I'm going to say they're VGA screens with digitizers. They're very small, thin. And I don't understand why these aren't being used with these little chips or Pi Zeros or whatnot, why somebody's not hooking these things together. I'll tell you what, they are beautiful and they really work well.
Yeah, so it's an old Palm hardware, looking at that link. As for why it's not being used with the Pi Zero or your question, I guess it's because, it could be partly because people don't know it's out there, you know.
Maybe so. I'll tell you what, the displays are exceptional. I'm going to say they're just exceptional display and digitizers. I mean, they come with the digitizer built in and everything. It's got a little ribbon cable coming out the side. And that would be spectacular for use with a little arm board, I would think. And as a matter of fact, I would suspect that the little Palm TX is an arm board or something similar. I would think it would be very doable. Anyway, my two cents. The guy is sitting on 10 or 20 of his little screens in brand new condition.
So, I mean, it was many Americans on here at the end, and I'm in England, so, you know, it's nearly midday here, but maybe some of the rest of the people have now finally, you know, gone to sleep.
Probably so. I'm just getting started for the day.
Yeah, did you wake up early then?
I came in at midnight tonight, a little bit before midnight. I work from one day to the next and don't really keep any solid hours. I just never come into this maddening existence of screens mounted.
You don't sleep properly, is that what you meant?
Really. I try to get 8 hours worth of sleep a day. Sometimes it stretches on a little bit further, so my schedule gets kicked around the clock every so often.
What are you doing today then?
Unless I'm called in for an emergency, I am off until tomorrow. I had my first day off since October the 7th.
Oh, emergency means like a fix a server or something like that, yeah.
And I'm backing up my machines, and trying to decommission some of them. And the rest of them I'm going to try to nuke and pave and start over, I think.
Backing up what?
I'm backing up machines. I got busy on a project that just took every waking hour for several months, and I got behind and didn't get my machines backed up. And I'm terrified something bad's going to happen, like CryptoLocker, a network version of CryptoLocker, or something's going to creep inside the house and get everything.
Oh, yeah.
Or something. The house is going to burn down, and I won't have an off-site backup of everything or something. I'm a big believer in backups. When I mean backups, I mean, you know, like full image backup of the hard drive.
Yeah, backups. Well, I mean, I need to sort this laptop out again. I'll have to back up my data because I'm going to do a full all operating systems reinstall and setup thing. But generally, I think most people aren't very good at backing up, including techies. You know, it's like, oh, you're meant to back up all your data, but who actually goes and does it? Because I think a lot of people don't back up their data properly, unless you're in business and you're doing servers and all that, you know, important stuff, you really got to keep backed up. But otherwise, I think people aren't very good at backing up, including techies who will go to people, oh, you should back up.
I've got a saying around here is your backup's only as good as the last one you tested. make sure it works. We used to back up the machines once a month and then pull the drive out and stick the backup drive in there, the one we imaged from, and boot it and make sure that it ran okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you find they don't.
Ken's going to close the official New Year show off in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. He's still carrying on chatting, but he's got 2 minutes left.
Yeah, show will continue, obviously, but the last time zone, Baker Island and Holland Island, much of the U.S. minor outlying islands, and the last time zone will be turning into 2017 in more or less 1 minute from now. Just like to take this opportunity, even though I wasn't organizing it this year, to thank Honky Magoo, Kevin Wisher, Taj, and John Newsetter for putting stuff together so that we could do this year.
It's strange. I just want to quickly add here, it's strange with time zones because you've got the daylight same time as well. You've got.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. The last time zone has moved in, and the HBR New Year show, 5th annual New Year show, is officially over. Yes. Thank you.
You're 30 seconds early.
Oh, 30. Cool.
Yeah, 30 seconds early.
25, 20, 19, 18. Tomcat Science is going to kill all this.
Happy New Year, last place.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Boom! It's done.
There you go.
Thanks very much. Welcome everybody to 2017.
Right. My last backup just completed.
Well done. Okay, I'll go post some shows. Talk to you later. We keep the streams up. Everything's continuing on. It's just the last time zone went, if anyone's interested.
I'm only 6 hours late.
Well, you can keep the after show going for another 20 hours if you want them.
My job was to get all the machines backed up for 2016, and I'm only 6 hours late. Not bad.
You mean to update them all? Well, to back them all up, you mean?
Back them all up. I had two Apples that ran behind their original backup that I set didn't complete. So I had to start over when I got up this morning.
Joe, I found a black and white 20-pin Palm connector link. See if that might help you a little bit.
Yeah. Give me a second. I got to get it from my mumble machine over to my surfing machine. Oh, dear. Simpler. ChiefDelphi.com. I like the name of the site. Chief Delphi. I'm an old Borland guy, so. You've ever heard of Delphi? It's a knockoff of Turbo Pascal.
You might have more pens to deal with the color, but the black and white one looks pretty complete.
I'm checking it out. That's pretty cool. Thank you.
Looks like the last link has a wiring diagram and a bit of firmware. Driving from a PIC.
Yeah, I'm afraid the display is probably quite a bit different. The Palm Pilot. Apparently, I was very wrong on the resolution. It's 320 by 480 TFT LCD, 16-bit. I'm here. Ijo's still here. Sorry, I'm trying to sort through. Anybody else out there?
Yep.
You just said yes. Yep.
Me.
Oh, you're back. Did you get some sleep then?
Yeah, I got a long nap.
I was gonna go off this, but maybe not now. it was only like me and TJ left. But yeah, the actual thing's over now. But this will come out eventually on the after show, I guess. We're like 8 hours behind, I think it was. You still here now?
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand what you're saying.
I said you're 8 hours behind, I think. It's like 3 there, is it? Something like that.
Oh, it's 7:23 a.m. here.
Okay, five hours behind, then not more.
Must be on Eastern time.
Which is your time zone, I think.
Yep.
I think you're both in the same one, TJ as well.
Heard my name.
Have you been up all night, or did you get to sleep as well?
I came in a little bit before midnight, my time.
You know, I meant that, but yeah, you said earlier.
I guess that's figurative. You might not know where I'm at. About 6 hours ago, a little more than 6 hours ago.
About Chimvacan, whatever she's called.
It is UTC. So it says 12:24 p.m. UTC.
12:24 p.m. is where I am now, yeah.
That's my, or what did you say? 13:24, I guess it's more proper. No, 12:24, that's right. I'm not thinking straight. I've worked since October 7th was my last half day off. And ever since then, I've been taking snippets of this, that, and the next thing that I've found and don't want to lose, and been throwing them in directories all over the place trying to save stuff as I would work. And now it's time to pay the piper and sort all this stuff and put it where it's supposed to be. And I'm kind of lost.
You've turned into a computer, pretty much.
I guess, yeah. I've got all this software updates and this, that. And, oh, look at this nifty picture I saved from Google and stuff. You know, just thousands of files that I just shortcut. So save that. I've just got all this stuff. And I've got to somehow put it where it belongs. Where it belongs in the trash can. That's what it belongs. I shouldn't be doing this on my day off, should I? Anyway, for about 3 months, I've been taking just stuff and throwing it in directories, just trying to save it back, because it's valuable, I suppose, or could be valuable. I'm looking at all, wondering whether it is valuable.
Well, at least it's Linux, not Windows.
Me? Oh, it's Linux, Windows, Mac, BSD, Android, OS X, iOS. A lot of different versions of Linux, several versions of Windows, pretty much everything there is.
Hello, Clucky. How that is.
Or I didn't catch that.
I don't know, somebody new came into the room, so I was seeing if we get them to chat, maybe.
Still didn't quite catch it. I'm hard of hearing. You're talking to me. I apologize.
Sorry, what
Hello,
was that?
All. Clucky here.
What did you say, Joe? Was that? Yeah, hello, Clucky. Were you on earlier, Clucky?
Lurking, yeah.
Oh, he didn't actually come on earlier then.
There was a really interesting discussion that was around 3 or 4 UTC, and I was listening in, but I didn't really have anything to add. That was the part about Raspberry Pis and mobile phones and freedom and practical freedom and all that.
That sounds about right. The interesting discussion went on when I was sleeping.
Well, I learned something. I've been looking at the Pine 64, and it seems like it's pretty much something you don't want to buy. So I learned that.
Where are you from, actually?
Sweden.
Jag är halv svensk, så jag kan prata svenska också. Men jag kunde inte höra att du var från Sverige instantly.
Okej, det är bra antar jag.
This is actually the after show now, or will be, so it doesn't really matter so much what people chat about now, because I think it'll come up eventually, but not that soon, probably. Because everywhere, the last place got into 2017 half an hour ago, so.
Well, I'm mostly here to hang out, so it doesn't make a big difference for me.
What do you say this Pine 64 or something you don't want?
It seems people had a lot of trouble with it. It's a bit unspecific, but I think people were talking about the graphics hardware, that it's not really up to speed compared to what's in the Raspberry Pi 3. And then someone said it using it, like, not for benchmarks, but for practical use, it seemed a bit laggy compared to something like the Odroid.
I'm not sure I'd totally agree with that. I have two. One of them's tiny bit flaky. I think it's just a power connector, the reflowed. In general, I'm very pleased with it. I have a lot of different ARM boards to compare it against. I find it to be a pretty decent board.
The Pine 64, I mean, yeah, we had a few discussions about that. I think I'll probably end up buying those laptops, though. I mean, they're so cheap. But I think in reality that, yeah, it's going to be obviously slightly limiting compared to x86 because it's, you know, it's ARM, so it's not going to run completely the same amount of programs. But other than that, I guess it's, like it's advertised, it's a cheap ARM computer, isn't it?
Looks like the Pine 64 is really the best 64-bit ARM performance per buck you can get, is my impression, if you want a complete system on chip.
I don't disagree with that. I like the fact that you can get them with the extra RAM. That comes in really handy.
I absolutely appreciate that it's available in 2 gigabytes of RAM, which is a problem with the Raspberry Pi 3.
It makes a big difference. The choice of OSs isn't quite complete, I want to say. I haven't tried them all out either, but it seems a little laggy. I think it's just going to take time for developers to climb on board, more people support the board.
Why were you up at like 4 or 5 a.m. then, or 6 a.m. even in Sweden? You said the interception was back then, so you must be awake in the night listening to that then. Clacky. Why was that?
Well, my aim was to enjoy New Year's Eve and the midnight countdown and all that with my relatives. And then when they went to bed, I was planning to come on the channel. But it was a bit quiet around 1 UTC. And also my little boy was still pretty active at the time. So it took a while to get him to bed. And when he was finally in bed, it was already like 3 UTC. And then I figured, okay, he's sleeping and I'm going on the channel. And then it turned out there were a couple of, I guess mostly Americans, but it was one British voice that I recognized, but I can't remember who it was right now. So it turned out to be pretty interesting. And I stayed out for 2 hours and then I figured that. I didn't have much to add. So I thought I'd hit a couple hours of sleep and then get back.
Yeah, British voice, maybe Thistle Web or Gordon, Scottish voice, but it's been mostly Americans this year, which, as usual, I suppose, it's, you know, it's HPR, isn't it? But which is slightly disappointing in a way, because it's, you know, it's nice to have people more from, a few more from different countries as well. That's what I think, anyway. So there are, the thing that do a Hår från Sverige, men vad i Sverige är du från? Did you hear what I said?
Sorry, my boy just came running. I have to get out for a short while.
Yeah, just quickly. Oh, you might have missed what I just said, but I guess quickly. Where did I was saying it's nice that it was? It's good that there were some more people who weren't from America on as well, and it would be nice if there were some more. And then I said in Swedish, where in Sweden? Are you from?
Not too far from Stockholm, about 2 hours train from Stockholm.
2 hours from Stockholm, okay.
Yeah, so I'm from the central parts. I grew up on the border between Västmanland and Dalecarlia, and then I've been studying in Linköping for several years. I've been living in Germany for a while, and in Hong Kong. My other half of my family is from Hong Kong, and we're moving back there soon.
I don't know Linköping so much, but Norrköping, definitely, because my mum was from there.
Oh, okay. And where's the other half of your heritage from? Is that from the US?
No, from England. So I've lived in England most of my life so far. But I was actually born in Sweden, which is useful, actually, because it means that, you know, I can get a Swedish passport if I want one. That means I could be in the EU still. Why my passport? You've heard all about that, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's good escape hatch at this point in history.
Yeah.
Yeah, my little boy, he has a Chinese and a Swedish citizenship, so he's really prepared for whatever's going to happen to the world.
He's half Chinese as well, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, it's true, China may take off a bit more because it's big anyway, but, you know, it's about markets and economies and companies and money, so, yeah, it may become a bit more all over the world in that sense. Plus all the tech is made in China anyway. That's just one aspect, but, yeah.
Yeah,
well, most tech is.
I think if you're able to be a bridge between the Western world, where a lot of things are still being designed and sold, and China, where the stuff is being produced, then you have a pretty important role to play. And even as development is moving more and more to China, then you're still at the interface where a lot of stuff is happening.
Yeah.
So I ordered one of the EOMA 68 devices, and I've been following that guy's blog, and he's moving back and forth between Hong Kong and Zhuhai and some other places. And if that were my boy, he wouldn't have any such issues. He could just come and go as he liked everywhere. The EOMA 68, he's reusing the PCMCIA form factor to make CPU cards that you can then plug into as an upgradable part of a laptop or a mini desktop or stuff like that.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one, but that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes. It's a pretty cool project.
So are you the Swedish one or was it the other way around?
Sorry?
Well, you said your boy's half Chinese. That's what you said. So I guess someone's Chinese then.
Yeah, I'm the Swedish half.
Have you got snow where you are?
There's remains of snow.
That's one particularly annoying thing about England is that, I mean, it gets cold. Okay, it can be above zero, but it does go below zero at times. But you know, it gets cold or chilly, but it rarely snows, so it's like, you know, getting cold for what? Because it's so rare that it snows, and then when it snows, the country gets in a bit of a mess anyway, but snow is nice because it changes stuff, it makes it look nice, you know what I mean?
In the dark of winter, snow definitely helps lighten up things. We had snow even in Linköping already in November, and you thought, wow, this is great, we're going to have a white Christmas, and then the next week, it all just melted away, but we got one day of skiing out of it. And then snow came back 2 weeks before Christmas, and then most of it melted away a week before Christmas, and we had a green Christmas, apart from some patches of snow that still remain. But it's been above zero for several days.
Oh, so you live in Linköping, is that what you said?
Yeah, that's where I live, and now I'm visiting my parents a bit further up north. It's 3 hours north of Linköping.
Right, I see. Yeah, one of my mum's brothers, he lives in Linköping, so, and her friend is near there as well.
It's a good town to be. When we moved back from Hong Kong last time, we figured that, wow, after living in the big city, we couldn't bear living anywhere except Stockholm. But as it turns out, if you live in the Stockholm suburb and you work in the Stockholm suburb, you seldom have time to go downtown anyway. And downtown Linköping is better than downtown suburb. So Linköping has been pretty great.
Yeah. Joe, are you still about, all, by the way?
I am.
What I was going to say to you, or something like that, I assume you only speak English, but which is a bit boring, isn't it? If I can speak Swedish as well, but you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? Like languages are a bit fun, or can be.
English is my native language.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I should ask that to Clacky, actually. Do you think it's good that you can speak, or similar to him, do you think it's good that you can speak Swedish quite well, obviously, and then English as well, quite well? And maybe there's another language that you know as well, Chinese or something, I don't know.
I'm working on my Chinese, and one of our many reasons for going back to Hong Kong is to let our boy learn proper Chinese as well. He lived there his first year, and then we've been in Sweden for 3 years, so now he speaks Swedish fluently, and he speaks like 10 words of Cantonese, so it's going to be good for him to catch up on that. I think it's definitely an advantage to have at least two mother tongues, which I don't, but he will. I think it gives you a good opportunity and the mental flexibility to learn many more languages further on.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Although it depends a bit on the languages, but yeah, okay, he's got Swedish. He's going to learn English, obviously, and then he would have Chinese. So yeah, he'd be pretty much a language expert, I guess.
Yeah, two really different languages like that. I mean, I speak Swedish, German, and English, and that's in a very wide sense they're largely the same language. They're pretty close within the Germanic language family, and learning Chinese is definitely going to open up new parts of your brain that you won't open up by just learning several Germanic languages.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, the letters are, you know, the same letters, A, B, C, D, all that, you know, is the same across English, German, and Swedish, and all those languages. Although there's a free extra letters at the very end of the Swedish alphabet, which is found in German as well, but not in English. But other than that, you know, it's very similar for writing. And then speaking is probably a lot more similarities than if you compare that to, say, Chinese, which is what you're saying as well. So if you have completely different languages and you know types of languages and you know about two of those, then, yeah, you should be able to learn pretty much any other language easier, I would have thought, as well.
Well, the writing is one thing, but I think the internal structure of the language is what really makes you think differently in some ways, and at least it helps you not block off your mind to new ways of expressing things. Chinese languages are very different from any Indo-European languages, really, in how sentences are built up and what kind of things the language considers important to distinguish and what kinds of things to group together. I think that's what creates challenges. I've learned a bit of Japanese before, and I've been learning Chinese, and it's really some things that really come naturally to you as a European speaker that seems really important at the core of the languages simply don't exist in some Asian languages, because especially Chinese, because it has barely any grammar in the same sense that Indo-European languages do.
Yeah, and then their text, their letters are different as well. It's like images or something. There was a girl who, public speaking thing, but she was doing a basic Chinese lesson speech, but it's totally different compared to our language, well, German and Swedish and English in that sense.
Well, the writing is definitely, I mean, it's something completely different, but I think that's just something you have to learn, and I think it does less to your brain than the differences in language structure. Conceivably, you could just take Chinese characters and write Swedish with it. I mean, that's basically what the Japanese did. The Japanese language has no original connection to Chinese, but they just imported the characters and made them their own and made it work with Japanese, and you could do that with Swedish as well. So I think the characters are culturally very important to the Chinese, but they're not what makes the language distinguish itself from Indo-European languages.
Yeah. I mean, my mum was always a bit annoyed that she never ever, because her mother was actually Finnish and then her dad was Swedish, so she was always annoyed that she never got taught Finnish by her mother. And I mean, I never got taught Finnish either, but I think, but apparently Finnish is a very complicated language to learn when you don't know Finnish. And...
Oh yeah, Finnish is a good case in point that they still use Latin characters, but I think Finnish is probably, I don't know Finnish, but from what I gather, it's probably also a language that does interesting things to your brain. If you're shaped in the Germanic mold and then you have to learn Finnish, it's a completely different way of building a language in some senses.
Do you think, obviously you think languages are a good thing and knowing more than one that we were just discussing, but I think especially from people from England, England, is it not the whole UK, because Wales has got Welsh as well a bit, and Scotland as whatever, but English people, I think that there's an attitude from a lot, at least younger people, that you don't really need to know another language as such, because sort of like pretty much everybody speaks English anyway, or at least around in Europe and America and all that, but reception could be South America and... But you think that that's kind of wrong to have that attitude, that other languages don't really matter, just know English? Or do you think that, like, you know, yeah, you should be learning another language, that's German or French or Spanish or whatever it's going to be at school?
It's difficult to say, really. But I mean, from a practical viewpoint, it really makes sense to look at... I mean, everything that you invest energy and time into learning is you are deprioritizing other things. So for me, having learned more languages, that has really made a lot of sense to me. But I could see that if you already have English and you can access most of the world with that, I could see how it would be difficult to motivate learning more languages. And I mean, everyone wants to be a hipster and say, oh, in Europe, everyone knows all these languages and they're really cool for it. And I think it's good for you and it's good for your ways of thinking. But I don't think it's like it's a completely necessary thing that you're losing out on part of the world if you don't learn more languages. I don't know where I'm going with this. I think it's really cool to learn more languages, and I think it's good for you, but there are many things that are good for you, and every time you learn something, there's something else you're not learning. So as long as you make good use of your time and you keep learning things, I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, I think that's true as well. Yeah, if you start learning languages, then there's something else that you're not going to be potentially learning as well. And then if you should be learning the other thing instead, or language or whatever, it all depends on who you are. But I do think in general that languages are an interesting thing, and it's great that I know more than one language. I can speak Swedish, you know, nearly as good as English. Sometimes there's a few words I'm like, oh, what's that word in Swedish? But in general, I can speak it nearly as good as English. I can't write it that well, which is a bit annoying. I can read it, but not majorly well, but speaking is probably the main aspect anyway, so I can get by quite nicely in Swedish.
I think what's really great about languages is not only is it a good way of sort of training and developing certain parts of your mental faculties, but it's also a leverage to gain access to more knowledge. You can learn more things by having access to material in other languages. Maybe not Swedish, but let's say if you know a Germanic language and then you learn Spanish or Chinese, which gives you access to huge parts of the world that you wouldn't otherwise have access to. That's probably a great feature of learning a language that also should not be discounted. That's a strong argument in favor of learning more languages.
I agree with that, and I was thinking something that, like that earlier, that the only thing with languages is, and we kind of said it, you know, the Chinese, oh, that's great. China is everywhere. China's going to be massive. That's a great language to learn. But something like Swedish, or even Welsh, you could say, or something like that, it's just not, it's a nice language, but they're not so relevant in the world as a whole, because you can, you know, Swedish, who speaks Swedish? Swedish people, you can get by in Finland with it, in Norway and Denmark, but that's about, you know, that's about as far as it goes, really, because the rest of the world won't know Swedish, basically. Welsh, again, I think Welsh, you're pretty much, I live near Wales actually as well, but I think with Welsh you're pretty much stuck to Wales there, and actually a lot of people in Wales don't even know Welsh who live there, so it's not as relevant. But something like Spanish, well, the whole of South America, except for Brazil, you know, Spanish speaking, which is one of your examples, I think, as well. So some languages in that sense are worth more than others, but generally, or you could say that, but generally, any language would be good to learn, because, we just talked about that as well. It makes you think, you'll learn different things, and you'll.
I think as a Germanic speaker, you can learn another Germanic language as a good way to flex your sort of language muscles. You can use that as a starting point to get used to, okay, some things are a little bit different in other languages than in my own language. And then once you got there, you can like move on to the next level, which would be learning Spanish or French. And if you then jump off from there, okay, languages can be different in these different ways. Then from there, you can go to the next level, which would be something like Russian or Arabic or Chinese, which would make things really different. I think that's one argument for learning a language that is maybe not super useful in a practical sense, but it could be a good exercise, like learning Dutch or German. Well, German is useful in itself, of course, because there's 100 million speakers or whatever. But Dutch or Swedish is still useful just, you know, as a first other language to learn, because they're not too difficult and not too different. And you still get this feeling of, wow, I know a different language and I get access to all these people. And then that could inspire you to learn something even more different and difficult.
Yeah. Joe, are you still here now? I just wondered, he might have disappeared now for real.
Joe is here.
Oh, you still let you probably just listening to our language discussion.
I am. I find it very interesting.
What do you think? So, what I was trying to say is that I assume that you only speak English, or American English, you could say, which is slightly different from British English, but that's a different subject. But you probably only really speak English. Well, I might be wrong, but do you think, you know, would you want to learn another language potentially, or would you think it would be good if you knew another language better? You know, instead of just English?
Well, I grew up in a German family, spoke quite a bit of German. I didn't learn very much at all. I spent some time in Mexico and South America. I find it very interesting that I can go there and I pick Spanish up fluently within a few days, and I can get on the plane and forget it all by the time I get back to the States. Once hired a guy to come in just to speak Spanish, just so that I would keep it going. But I find it interesting how easy I can get it back and how quickly I lose it. I'd like to speak other languages. I think it'd be very, very helpful. I don't travel nearly as much as I used to, but I used to go to Europe quite often. And I'm always very grateful that people seem to speak English.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier, though, because with the point of, you know, if you're an English speaker, you can go to the mainland Europe, you can go anywhere pretty much, and any of those countries, and you can get by with English, or mostly, because pretty much everybody speaks English. And so some people have the idea that if you're from an English speaker, like England or somewhere, well, you know what, we don't really need to learn another language, because everybody speaks English anyway. And do you think that's like a good, like an okay attitude to have? Or do you think it's more like, well, you know what, you should maybe actually learn at least some of their language if you're going to be there for a long time? Or do you think it should just be like, oh, well, it doesn't really matter. Everyone knows English.
No, I think that it's good to learn other languages. Both of our daughters were fluent in three or four languages, or still are. We didn't practice it enough in our direct house with my wife and I, but we both came from families that spoke German. So, and my father, I think he was fluent in almost 30 languages. So, I see a great deal of importance to it. I guess I'm just lazy, or I don't have enough time to play. I really wish I had more time to play with that. I'd like to travel more and go back over to Europe and spend more time and pick up.
Yeah, I was going to ask that as well. Do you think you want to learn German again, or spend some time learning that?
I would like to concentrate on German. I've talked to my wife Linda about coming over and spending a good deal of time in Germany. Most of our trips were very short but frequent, and she's not opposed to it. My health prevents me from traveling a good deal anymore. We love traveling. I guess that's a kind of a lame excuse. I could sit around and learn and speak German here a little bit better than I do.
Yeah, there's a lot of German on the GNU social network, so that's a lot of stuff you will have access to if you know German.
I pick up languages very quickly, but I spend most of my time I spend working, which is sad, especially at my age when I'm supposed to be retired.
You know computer languages instead. You know computer languages instead.
I do computer languages, and I do multiple computer languages, and I pick those up and move between those very easily.
Such as, but all those are going to be based on English or pretty much anyway. But yes, what computer languages do you know?
Most of them. I spend most of my time writing C and a good deal of Pascal as well, but I speak them all. A little bit of Perl. I like Perl. I don't really consider PHP a language. I actually consider it a Perl derivative. I used to speak quite a bit of BASIC in my day. PostScript, a favorite of mine. It's a very Forth-like language. I spend most of my time writing C code. A little simpler. And I write quite a bit of it, too. Last project that I've been working on, I wrote 1.6 million lines of code. It just it grew by 98,000 lines this past 3 months. So it's a new milestone. It was 1.5 million lines of code.
PHP is derivative of Perl, you said. I don't really know about that, but I guess so. you said it was, or you consider it to be.
So well, it could be a different size. Yeah. It's really got a big Perl backbone to it. I mean, if you work in PHP and you've worked in Perl before, you can really see where the language came from, where it got its beginnings and its leanings. And it works a little differently because it's a parsed language. But if you've ever worked with parsing HTML that contained Perl, you're basically doing the same thing. You start to really see the similarities between it. I suppose I do. That's what it looks like to me as a server parsed Perl.
Yeah, it's not technically a Perl derivative, but it's sort of a spiritual Perl derivative.
Right. There's a lot of similarities to it. And Perl's kind of a language on its own. I mean, it's C based, but if you were hard pressed to find something that was like it, PHP would be it, in my opinion.
Or as Larry Wall said, it's really frustrating to see PHP redo all the mistakes we did in early Perl.
I don't do a lot of PHP, but I do a little bit. I have written a lot of Perl.
I was interested to hear you mention PostScript there. Have you actually been writing, manually writing PostScript? And what did you use that for? Because most people would consider PostScript more or less a binary or a compile target.
Well, I've been writing PostScript since 1985. one of the original Apple Laser writers. I was a contributor to a project that you may know. I was a sideline contributor to PostScript, several other clone PostScript interpreters. I've written PostScript drivers, written PostScript programs back in the old days. The Motorola processors inside the printers like Apple LaserWriters had more memory and were more powerful than our desktop computers. And we used to write programs and download them to the printer and let it churn on the data and then return it over the printer channel, serial cable or whatever.
So to do actual non-print related calculations in the printer.
That's correct. Yes.
There's a way to channel that back. I didn't know that.
Yes,
that's really interesting.
You could do that via a serial port or a bidirectional printer cable. Back in those days, the Motorola 6000.
Makes me think of the Commodore 64 days where people would use the disk drive as a co-processor. You download a part of your program to the disk drive, and then you communicated with it over the serial channel. So when people had demo competitions, they would limit the amount of drives that you have available.
Yeah, used to be quite a bit of stuff. But those printers, I'm going to say that they had four megs of RAM back in the day when your PC probably had 640K, maybe. Maybe they had more RAM than that. But the chip was more powerful, and you could download programs to it and let it churn. I did a lot of the programming in the early days of computer graphics. A lot of desktop publishing apps, worked on gaming apps. But I've written quite a bit of PostScript and was an unofficial contributor to some of the PostScript code and books that ended up coming out of Adobe System back in the day. And I still do.
Would be really cool to hear more about this. If there's any articles, or if you would like to do an HBR episode about how people have been using printers as basically worker processors or for offloading calculations. Mm-hmm. This is an entirely new area for me. It sounds very interesting.
Oh yeah, something back in those days. Do something on that. I might do something on early gaming engines. I've worked on a lot of the early gaming engines. The guy that did ID Software was a neighbor of mine. I worked on the first Disney Interactive CDs and the gaming engine that was used by Warner Brothers. It was actually an engine from Seventh Level called the Top Gun Engine. On a number of the early animated games. Got to work with a lot of cool people in the industry, like Howie Mandel and the all those British comedy guys, Monty Python, Ron Cleese, and those people.
Wow, that's cool.
I threw them out of my office one time. Funny story, I walked into my office. The place was basically a bunch of mostly divorced guys that lived there and coded at the office. It's so bad they had hammocks in the office to sleep by. But anyway, I was married and had a family, and they'd let me go home. But, you know, I'd have to come into the office every now and then. Walked in there. One time I walked in there, there was a guy sitting there with a guitar in my chair. My office said, "You're going to have to leave." I was back in the English with sheepishly says, "Okay." Nice guitar, Fender. Well, who are you? It turned out to be David Gilmour of Pink Floyd. And the Monty Python guys, they showed up one time. These are not the guys you want to come in and say, you know, "Hey, guys, you've got to leave. I've got to go to work," because they'll start cutting up, and you won't get them out of your office. They're funny.
All right, it's been great to drop by. I have some away from keyword concerns knocking at my shoulder, so I'll maybe be back later. But for the moment, I have to leave.
Okay. Det var fint att prata med dig, och det kanske kommer vara människor att prata senare eller inte, jag vet inte, men ja, hej då.
Ja visst, kul att höras.
Yeah, he's going. Oh, he's gone.
Oh my, raining.
What's that?
Oh, I said, oh my, it's really raining.
I think it was here earlier, but now it's okay.
Starting to flood everywhere here.
Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Who was that?
That's me, Fweeb.
Oh, you, right. Okay. I didn't see the light up.
Oh, I get that a lot. Oh, you.
No, I was looking away from the laptop screen as you said morning, so I was like, who was that? Okay, right.
I could have gotten away with trying to do it. I've possessed your computer gag. For about 10 seconds, maybe.
Were you on the actual show earlier? Because it's over now, really. But they'll put this up probably eventually anyway, after show or whatever.
Yeah, I was in and out throughout the day. But yeah, I saw that it had ended, but there, I figured I'd poke my head and see if people were still yammering about. And hi!
We need to get more people on from somehow from from elsewhere. I mean, there's a lot of Americans on HBO, isn't there? Mostly. It would be good if there were a few more people from other countries as well, in general, I think, just because it, you know, it makes more interesting. Well, I noticed certain people didn't seem to come on at all who have been on before from Britain and all over the place.
Yeah, I think there are a number of people with American English accents too who are, you know, granted they're folks who are also expats, so they are living in other places, but they're not from those other places. But yeah, I think it's what, a 50-50 shot. 50% is folks from the States, and then 50% is from everywhere else.
Yeah, that's probably about. No, probably more for the States, actually.
So what you're saying is I don't owe Ken a show.
I don't know. Do you or don't you?
Well, I mean, obviously, I should probably record a show for HBR because I haven't in the time that I've been listening to HBR. I guess I've been listening to HBR for about 2 years, and I'm in a show deficit. I probably owe at least one or two. But yeah, but then again, if we have an overabundance of folks from the States who are producing shows, and maybe I should just keep my mouth shut.
Right. I'm
rationalizing my laziness here.
Ken might be listening to this in the future, so Ken would probably say that you still owe him a show for some reason or the other.
I'm promised out for two.
Yeah, I have two in mind. I just haven't recorded them. I only recently got my show back up on the off of hiatus after about a year and a half. So I've been.
You've got the open source show, right?
Yeah, the open source creative.
I listened to a couple episodes the other day.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Of course, I've been on vacation for 2 weeks, so I haven't put I haven't put any shows up for that.
Well, just to prove that I was listening, and I was listening. I really was listening. You did a bit about prioritizing what you should be listening to, didn't you?
It's true, and I'm going to have to definitely step on that one, because since I haven't been commuting to work for the last 2 weeks, I have an inventory of podcasts that I have to listen to, so I have to straighten that one out.
Now, don't get your feelings hurt, because I'm telling you, I'm listening. I was listening. I really was. You can tell, right? I just proved I was listening to your show, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm talking about the 50 or so subscriptions that I have to listen to that I've fallen behind on.
Well, see, that was my problem. I had all these shows. I said, I got to listen to this, got to listen to this, got to listen to this. And I've got this new podcast of the open source show, and I'm listening to that. And you said something about prioritizing what you're listening to. You got to prioritize it. And I said, hell, I've got to push stop and go listen to a different podcast. And that's what I did. And don't get your feelings hurt on that, but I took your advice, and I'm pushing to stop on your own podcast.
Hey, no, I figure, as far as I can figure, that's actionable work there. I inspired something to happen. I'm counting that as a success.
Good, because this is really what it was meant to be. I mean, I was in the middle of coding. I mean, I was working hard. You had no idea how hard I was. And I was listening to podcasts, and you said that, and I stopped everything, and I looked down at my little phone. I was sitting there playing, and I said, he's right. And I said, move on to the next one.
Awesome.
But I will listen to your next one, I promise. I'll probably go back and listen to some other ones, because in the meantime, I've cleared most of my queue, and now I have time to listen. So you did me a great favor. I wanted to let you know that.
Glad I could help with that. Yeah, I've got two things I want to record for HPR that I think would be worth putting up there that aren't really necessarily in the wheelhouse of my show. So I just have to sit down and get those recorded and edited.
I have to too. I am I owe Ken to, and what was really great was that I've got a rebuttal to a show that somebody did that mentioned me in two podcasts that they did, two of the HBR shows, and they misquoted me.
Definitely put that one up then.
Yeah, I gotta do a rebuttal.
Oh, speaking of you and other shows from Linux Lugcast, I've been looking a little bit into your mouse driver thing you were talking about, and I think unfortunately the way it works, at least from the X11 setup, that the feature you're particularly interested in might be handled on the application side. I don't know if it's handled on the driver side.
What did you say? It's handled where?
On the application side. So, for instance, I have I've been playing with that Surface Pro 3 for a little while, and I've been running Linux on that and having a great time with it, by the way.
And you just posted something on G Plus about it, didn't you?
Yeah.
I saw that.
And
matter of fact, I'm right. If you give me half a second, let me catch up with you, because I am sorting through all my files today, and one of the things that I'm sorting through is that.
Yeah. Well, what it comes down to is on the touchscreen, at least when I'm, and actually the two finger scroll, the multi-touch scrolling, I can get an inertial behavior in Firefox, because I think Firefox supports that, and I can get it, I think, in Chromium, but in say GVim or a terminal, there's no support in the application for that behavior. So I'm hesitant to say that it would be fixed in the driver.
Oh, I can tell you something about this, but you're going to have to allow me to grab a cup of coffee real fast.
Sure.
I'll be around because I have to check to make sure the coffee pot didn't explode and leave a mess. It'll take me about 1 minute and I'll be back. I have the information right in front of me.
Right on.
In regards to the Semantics touchpad driver, and I'm also working on the input been replaced under Arch. Let me go check the coffee pot real fast. Right back. Everybody still there?
Yep.
Okay, I know a little bit about this, and you're correct that inside the application, they can support things like coasting and mouse gestures. And in fact, an application can build that into the application without any concern as to the touchpad driver itself. As long as the touchpad actually works, the application might be able to get to some of that stuff. I know that because I've written an application that did some coasting work before in its display. But it's also something that could be handled at the driver level, where you could support gestures and gesturing. Hold on, let me back up on that. Not so much the gesturing, but the coasting that I'm after. And there's settings in the
Synaptics.
Oh, thank you so much. Say that one more time.
Synaptics.
Which, by the way, that driver that they call the Synapt driver is not actually from them. They had a Linux driver that fully supported coasting and all that many years ago, and they pulled it, and they promised that they were going to put out the source code for it and never did. Now that package has been deprecated in Arch and now has moved on to the input playing with it.
Right. Has it disconnected there? Back. Anyway, for anybody who's listening to this right now, why don't you come on for real and join us?
The F86 inputs no longer supported. Use libinput, sorry. I didn't catch your question. I'm deaf. You're going to have to bear with me, please.
Sub was just, oh, there's more subs in there. Sub, was suggesting that other people who are listening on the stream maybe come on and play with us.
Oh, good. Anyway, libinput is now taking over the name of the mouse driver that nobody seems to pronounce except for you, has been deprecated. But some of this, the gestures have to be supported from the application side. The coasting, and that's all I care about. I don't care about the gestures. The coasting, that can be handled at the driver level. Because that's really just an acceleration. Then you take your finger off and the cursor would continue and decay to a slow stop.
Yeah, I just one of those things I noticed it was happening on some applications and wasn't happening on others, and I was concerned that it was something that couldn't be a signal from the driver.
It's something that some applications may build in, and of course, if I end up enabling that somehow in the driver, and it's supposed to be enabled, there's supposed to be a setting through the front end to those drivers, the semantic input and the input lib both have a settings that are supposed to support coasting, but I've never been able to get it to work. So I don't know. Now, an application can build that in. They can say, hey, I'm detecting the mouse and it's moving this much, and you know, I think that they've let go and they've flung it to the left, and I'm going to continue on and just kind of slowly decay the acceleration. That's something that you can build that into an application. And of course, if you do have an application that does that and that does it in the driver, you may get a dual effect out of it, maybe an unwanted.
Yeah, I've seen, from what I can tell, at least from Firefox, it looks like it only activates it when you're using multi-touch, like for a screen. But if you're doing it with a mouse scroll, then it doesn't use any inertia.
I am way interested in solving this. Interestingly, I have heard at least a half dozen podcasts in the past 10 days mention sucky Linux touchpad drivers. And talk about it. I've heard it on Jupiter Broadcasting Show. I've heard it on at least 6 different podcasts in the past 10 days. People talking about how crappy it is. And they're right, it is. And if you've talked to a guy like me who lives on a laptop, mostly I live plugged into a mouse in a docking station. But, you know, I live on a laptop. It's very frustrating. And then you talk to somebody like my wife who... she can look at her touchpad and the static electricity from her hair or something throws it off and it just goes crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm not really big on touchpads. Usually I try and find a way just to turn them off.
You know, if you have a really, really good touchpad driver that does a really good job, you'll swear by them. They're wonderful things when they work well. But, you know, my big complaint is the only one that I've ever found that works well is a really old driver that I've got for Windows. And, man, it's beautiful. And it's my main reason for not switching over to Linux as a main host OS. I hate Windows. I think it's only suitable to run in a VM. I want on Linux so bad, I'm going to rewrite the fucking driver if I have to. And I have not given up. Just because it takes me forever to get anything done, don't give up on me. I mean, like, I'm sitting here, I've got the driver source in front of me. I've got notes, and I've got a whole directory going on this thing, and I've got a machine right to my right that I've been blowing different distros on and checking out the settings and whatnot on how we're going to pull this off, but it's going to get done. It's just not a full-time effort. Ever so often, I get a chance to look up and play with it. It's going to happen. Going to happen.
That's all right. I have a handful of projects that are in that same category, so I get it.
My big problem right now is that for the past 4 days, all I've been doing is just sorting through things, trying to get my systems backed up and everything so that I can do a massive nuke and pave. But to give you an idea, you've heard the story that I haven't had a day off since October the 7th or Olaf, basically. You know,
yep, been heard that.
You know, been working on this project with 1.6 million lines of code. And I'd added 98,000 new lines to it. And in the meantime, I've been taking every little note and project and everything that I've got, and I've just been throwing them into directories to save stuff back. And I've got little projects that are half-baked and stuff that just go on for miles of the stuff saved. Today, I'm sorting that out, and then I'm going to get on with life. Going to happen, I promise. And I'm going to get the HPR episodes recorded, too, I promise. Just not fake. Takes me forever. And then I've got people that help me along, like this one guy who wrote, recorded a podcast that told me I needed to prioritize what I was listening to, and I would get everything done. And he was right.
Well, my good deed for 2016 was done then.
That was really helpful. No, I mean, what you did was you set me off. I not only pushed stopped on your podcast and went on and started listening to some of the others, but I quickly started pushing stop on some of those and prioritizing those. And I blew out a queue that was, you know, 10 miles long and nothing flat. And I got what I needed to listen to. I got it listened to. I want to thank you for that. Well, thank you. Even though you were partially affected in my prioritization. Now, if I can just prioritize all these half-baked projects I've got going on. Boy, some of them are pretty good. I've got three different flavors of a font program that enumerates the fonts on your system and displays them in 3D.
Sweet.
I've got four different versions of a Google search, an alternative search for Google. You're not going to say, what?
Nah, I won't say that because... That's, you know.
Have you seen our alternative search for Google?
Probably not.
Oh, you're missing something. As you may or may not know, the Google search for Google communities ain't that great.
That's true. And that why I haven't been. I tend to only use Google search when I have to. I tend to use other engines.
May I propose you take a look at something?
Sure.
Try search.codeforsale.com. And that's the number for sale. And then the first entry is a single board computer virtual private server show.
Yep, that's it.
Click on that. You will see the G+ non-Google community search.
Yep, I'm looking at it now.
I'm sorry?
Yep, looking at it now.
Try it out. Search for Joe or
something. Hey, you're playing Big Buck Bunny on a pocket chip.
I'm sorry?
I said, hey, you were playing Big Buck Bunny on a pocket chip.
Yeah. Now, this is our non-Google community search. It was last indexed in September. Pardon me on that. I need to do that. We can also display this. What's not being shown is you can display this in, like, the Google HTML5 floating little article format. It looks just like you're on Google, but you're not. And it also drills down to the likely content. You ever clicked on a link in Google and it takes you to this guy's photos instead, or you go there and then here and there and trying to get to the article and then you finally get there?
Nice.
Well, this figures it out. I don't know if you see that likely content link.
Yep, yep.
And it's also got a command line version. It's fully documented. Blah, 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 blah. A lot of options. Lots and lots of options. It's kind of ugly and kind of backwards, you know, old school, but I'm getting there. I think it's cute.
Serves a need. That's all it needs to be.
It was running on an ARM board. But anyway, so now I've got four different versions of this project. I'm trying to figure out where I should stash all this. Log puller. I've got a project called Thing Test. I don't have any clue as to what it does, but I know it's important enough I put it in a directory to save it for something. But I have no idea what it does. Thing Test. Huh.
I'm gonna pause it, I guess, and say that it tests a thing.
You know what it does? It's a Google scraper.
Huh. Alrighty.
It's a Google community scraper. Huh. Why did I call it Thing Test? Glad I saved it. So what Linux distro is your favorite?
Favorite? Hard to tell. I am and have been an Arch user for quite some time, though. It tends to be my go-to for most situations.
I've been looking at this Antigross lately. It's an arch derivative.
Yeah, I haven't played with any of the derivatives, mostly because once I have Arch set up, I don't really need to change it. I just keep updating it because it's a rolling release. But and the actual Arch install process for me at least isn't all that tedious enough that I would have a huge need for Antigross or Manjaro.
I've been looking at just basically what they're throwing on top as desktops and how their mouse interactions work.
Oh, and that's the other part of it. My interface of choice is, or my window manager, desktop environment, if you will, of choice is Enlightenment, which they will. I mean, you can get them on those other setups, but it's not going to tailor. I mean, if they're not going to tailor to it, then I might as well just run regular Arch.
What's the latest one? Last time I looked at Enlightenment, it was the E17. Is that right?
I think they're up to 21 at this point.
Really? I know Linda loves it.
Yeah, I'd like to try 21.
Yeah, since I'm running it in Arch, I don't keep as close attention to version numbers as perhaps I should.
Hmm. Look at that. I've been concentrating on GNOME mainly.
I prefer GNOME as well, but why do you use the other guy? Why do you use Enlightenment as your preferred interface? Because, I mean, every time I've tried that E17, it's flashy, it's maybe more lightweight in a way, but it just seems to sort of be a bit more flashy and a bit more effects. Why is that your default or your preferred?
Well, it's always been very, very low on resource usage, and from a workflow standpoint, the hotkey setup for it, and I've basically got my configuration for it dialed in the way, kind of exactly the way I like it. And if they change it, then I'll have problems. But I've used a number of the other ones, and they've gotten to the point where I can get a similar setup to what I get in Enlightenment. But at that point, I mean, I might as well just use Enlightenment. So I mean, I've been using some version of Enlightenment since E17 was in perpetual beta for about 2 or 3 or more years, and I was using it well into that, and I was using E16 prior to that, and the workflow is I guess workflow is probably not the best word, but the user experience, user interface for E17 really suits me. Desktop menus, I can remove. I don't have any desktop icons. I don't have a taskbar. I just have a few handful of things that are pertaining to the desktop. I mean, if it weren't for Enlightenment, I probably would be using a tiling manager.
Ooh,
that's another one. Why do a lot of people are like, oh, tiling window manager, it is so good, but why do people think that?
I can't speak for other people, but for the people I've known who've used them, a lot of it has been mostly they don't want to think about desktop management or workspaces or anything like that. They want it to be tiled out and have the desktop get out of their way, the window manager or whatever, just sort of get out of the way. And a lot of them are primarily command line interface kind of people, so they'll just have they run X11 specifically so they can run 20 or 30 terms.
You think most of them are doing command line stuff versus GUI stuff?
A lot of them are. I mean, I'd be doing more on the graphic side of things, and the appeal for it for me specifically would be that it gets out of my way. If I want to have a floating window, I can have a floating window, but otherwise it'll just toss it as a tile. And it appeals to me as well, since one of the main programs I use is Blender, and essentially that's a tiling interface in itself.
Yeah. You're the Blender guy. You do 3D rendering stuff.
Yes.
I need to talk to you offline about a project. I'm not an artist at all. I'm no good at that at all, and that's proven fact, man. Howie Mandel and I had a big falling out because I was a graphics coder. I write graphics engines. They put me to work sinking eyes and little mouths and stuff to Stinky the Skunk and his Howie Mandel and Toonland DVD
Yep.
game. Yeah, I was the one who did that little mouse. Well, I wrote the graphics engine too, or I helped write the graphics engine for that. I can't do artistic work at all, but I've got a project. I need somebody to do something like that.
Right on. If I can't do it, I can point you in the right direction.
Well, that'd be great, because I need some direction on that. Something, somebody.
I think that's quite common, actually. If you're, you know, if you're a coder or programmer or something like that, then you're probably not so much a graphics artist and all that. In general, people, I mean, if you look at websites made by programmers, they tend to be quite basic, probably for that reason. He actually uses Blender. That's interesting, because obviously Blender is there. People know about it. It's known as a very popular open source 3D modeling program and all that. But then it's got a high learning curve, doesn't it? So I've had it Blender installed a few times personally just to have a look, and you sort of think, how would you actually use this program? Because it just seems so complicated. But
yeah, I've been referring to it lately as the Swiss Army chainsaw. of graphic applications, and it's very true. It's the thing about it is that there is a relatively high learning curve, but once you sort of wrap your brain around how it thinks, then there's a fair amount of internal consistency. There's a few hiccups, and they're trying to get that with the 2.8 overhaul, but in the general sense, once you sort of understand it, the sort of the design paradigms that are internal to it, picking up, say, the 3D modeling side, once you understand how 3D modeling works, then a lot of those same UI paradigms will apply in editing animation curves, for instance.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not really a 3D video animator, but I guess I probably told you. Have you used Simfig though as well? Saying that, you've known about Simfig, surely that's for 2D, not 3D, but still.
Yeah, I've used Simfig a little bit. One of my goals for the year is actually to play a bit more with a number of the different animation tools, including Simfig. I want to play more with Krita's animation timeline that they've added to it, and I have OpenTunes compiled, and I want to play with that as well. So yeah, I've messed around with those a little bit, but not to the degree that I know Blender at this point.
I get really lost in Blender.
Yeah, that can happen. full disclosure, I wrote Blender for Dummies.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I get really lost in Blender. I could have written Blender. I'd have no problems writing Blender, but using it, I'm lost.
Yeah, there's part of the issue is that Blender is not so much one application as it is about eight packed into a single interface. And so some people spend their entire time only doing sculpting or only doing painting or only doing 3D parts of it. But, you know, then they never actually touch, say, the compositor or the motion tracker or the video editor that's built into it. Of course, there are some people who only do the video editing.
Interesting package. I used it to create some models to bring into, you may have heard of it, Real Illusion has some 3D stuff.
Real Illusion, that's an older package too, isn't it?
Yeah, they still put stuff out. Oh, it escapes me at the moment. Luckily, I have a menu in front of me. Called someplace. My whole life is just out of control. Icon. Oh, my Blender icon. Need to update it. Okay. Well, thank you. You got something off my desk. I need stuff off my desk. I'm staring at directories named stuff. Do stuff and do stuff with. Do stuff with this stuff. Oh, my God. If you can tell, I'm organized.
Need to apply some, a text file and apply some version control to it.
You know, I used to be the most organized person you probably would have ever met. In the past couple of 3 years, it's all gone to pot, and I didn't get any of it. No, really, I'm looking at, like, directories named Do Stuff With. Here, I was very creative. I've got one that's With Do Stuff. I have the feeling that it has something to do with the DigitalOcean, because the do is capitalized.
Nice.
Yeah, I am organized. There's a method to my math. Somehow. Blender. I hear that people are predicting the death of the Ubuntu phone.
No, I've got three of the Ubuntu devices, and actually they're quite nice for what they are.
You say you have one?
One. I've got three Ubuntu devices.
You got
one,
three?
One, two, three.
One, two, three. Well, I have one Ubuntu phone. I've got one KDE Plasma mobile phone.
KDE Plasma mobile phone I would be interested in. However, as far as I know, you still can only really run that on your Nexus if you put it on yourself. There's no actual commercial available Plasma phone to buy.
I believe you're correct on that. I have it on a Nexus 5, nicked and paved.
But somebody said that Ubuntu phone wouldn't... No, Ubuntu phone is progressing. It will go somewhere. It's still... They've got a lot of stuff they're kind of working on. It's just taking time to get there, but it is improving. Well, the last day with the Air update did seem a little bit pointless installing that, but I think there was probably quite a few bug fixes in the background that got fixed anyway.
It's beautiful. I love it. On the Ubuntu phone, I have one on the... It's not really an Ubuntu phone. It's a Ubuntu Touch on a Nexus 4, and I like it a lot. And on the development side, I was able to install some compilers, and I was able to compile some code. And I have a friend who is doing a lot of GUI work using a package called Lazarus. It's I don't know if you've ever heard of Delphi, but it's a rapid application development tool that would make it possible to write applications for the phone very quickly.
Yeah, okay, so we've got two of us who like it. But I thought there was a question that somebody said, repeat the question. There was a question we just had, and I think I heard it how I heard it, but maybe I didn't.
Did I ask a question?
Was it Freeb? I mean, it might have been Freeb.
Once we started talking about the Ubuntu, the question is from TJ was basically he was trying to find out more about the I guess rumor that despite the niceness of Ubuntu devices, the Ubuntu phone might not make it through the year.
Yeah,
right. That's basically what I thought I heard. I think that Ubuntu Touch is going to keep on improving. The goal is to merge everything together on the desktop as well. So you'd have Unity 8 on the desktop by default. That's not coming just yet, but by default. But you've got a preview in 16.10 by default, an optional session. But they're going to merge everything together. So the computer, the tablet, and the phone, and any other device for that matter that where Ubuntu could potentially run that has a screen, that will also have Unity 8. In the background, you've got Libertine on the tablet already, so you can run Xorg programs. However, there's only some by default. You have to use a terminal currently to put more things on yourself, but they're going to make that easier. There'll be a package around with a separate package manager. On the desktop, you would have Libertine as well, so that you can run Xorg programs inside Unity 8, which they're sort of sorting out as well. And the idea is then to converge all of that together. The standard desktop, the tablet phone with Ubuntu Touch. Ubuntu Touch won't exist anymore when they converge it all together because it'll be called Ubuntu Personal. And that's what they're working on. And it's taking time. Ideally, they would like to have Unity 8 there by default in Ubuntu 18.04 launch support in 2 years. Or just something. No, actually, it's less than 2 years now, and that's what they're aiming for. But there's a lot of stuff they have to do. Plus, they have to rebase Ubuntu Touch on Ubuntu 16.04 long-term support, which had been in the plans for quite a while, but has not happened yet because of certain technical reasons, partly as well. It's not just because of systemd, but yeah, that's partly it. There's some other reasons as well why they haven't rebased it yet. Plus, the apps are going to break, or they may break if they just do it. But a commercial device, an Ubuntu Touch device, another one coming out this year, 2017, it's not looking that likely because we're looking like we might get an MX6, a Meizu MX6 when then gets becomes old or something like that with Ubuntu, but BQ don't seem to want to do one at the moment. And I think it's because there's all this stuff that isn't quite there yet that I've just been talking about, all this convergence, things going together. I think when that happens, that a company will be like, oh yeah, okay, we'll do an Ubuntu device again, or oh, we'll do a first Ubuntu device. But until then, I think they're going to hold off a bit on releasing another device. BQ have tried already, they've had devices, and Meizu have as well.
Oh my, that's an awful lot of information. Thank you so much.
Didn't you know about this? Or I've been following Ubuntu Touch quite, you know, reasonably closely on ISE as well. I should be on some of the mailing lists, to be honest, but you get enough info from ISE if you hang out in the channels and stuff. So I have an idea what's going on and not going on.
No, I really had no idea. I follow a couple of the communities on G+. I've got about 5 seconds a day to take a look. I was real happy to get over the error update. And have been a proponent. I post about it a lot and get snickered at a little bit. But I don't. I want to place some faith in the Ubuntu Touch. I want to see it grow. I desperately want to embrace it. I want to embrace something besides Android.
I mean, I am. I'm using it as my daily drive for already, as it's called. I'm happy me. On a laptop podcasting right now, but otherwise I'm on my tablet pretty much all the time. My Ubuntu tablet now, 99% of the time, basically, because I realized that I don't really need an actual computer most of the time anymore, because you can do web browsing and your email and you're listening to music and all that basic stuff on a tablet just fine. And then it's only occasionally when I want to do a virtual machine or something that, you know, really requires a computer. So I've been living the whole convergence idea with the Bluetooth keyboard as well, where, you know, you can just put it into desktop mode and tablet mode, and I've been doing that.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful to me. I'm trying to bail on Android. I've got an awful lot of devices that I could put Ubuntu Touch on. I've got, you know, the whole range of Nexus and whatnot. And I'm really wanting that converged idea that you're talking about with a phone and, you know, hook it up to the screen and keyboard. And boy, that just sounds wonderful to me. And I don't want to give up. I don't want to give up on this. I'm crying thinking, you know, the world is going to go to, Android, and the only hope is going to be something else is going to be dashed. And I don't think Sailfish is it. I looked into that, and I just Ubuntu Touch just is this bright, shiny, beautiful thing that I don't want it to leave. I want to support it. I've got other developers wanting to support it. I've got a guy who's writing GUI apps for it right now, and I'm getting ready to start doing the same.
System. Sailfish is good as well. It's I do have a Yola phone. We had this discussion earlier on, last night now actually, with somebody, but he basically said on here last night there was a discussion about we're talking Sailfish OS as well and Ubuntu Touch and. But he basically said that Sailfish OS is probably the best one out of the lot when it comes to like what how much you can run or currently, because you can run all the Android apps or pretty much you can do. They've got native apps as well, and Sailfish OS is quite a nice OS as well. But they do have different goals or different sort of ideas, even Tizen for that matter, if you put that in there as well. And I do think that Ubuntu Touch is probably. Or Ubuntu Personal, all this stuff is one of the most interesting ones to keep an eye on, because they've got all these ideas. It's just a bit unfortunate that it can't run Android apps. And it's not just because they don't want to support Android apps. There's questions come up, I've asked them in the channel, and it's also slightly technical reasons that they can't just support Android apps because of how technically it would have to be done. and how they can't really do it, wouldn't be compatible. That's the impression I got from IRC anyway. But I think the debate about Android apps should be less relevant when they have Libertine even more sorted out, because I see that as an advantage, because there's thousands of good quality desktop Linux programs, you know, from Firefox, GIMP, LibreOffice, well, he's on the tablet anyway, VLC, you know, there's thousands of desktop Linux programs that are good, that I think if you can run that easily on the tablet, and the Ubuntu tablet, or the phone for that matter, that would be actually quite a good thing. That the annoying thing is right now you have to go to terminal to add, you have to do your own snaps, you have to do terminal commands, and then you can put more of your own programs on you and all that, which is a bit complicated. But when the package manager is there, you just download and install that. So I think I think the next 2 years for Ubuntu Touch should be quite interesting to keep an eye on and see what's going on and when certain changes come as well.
Do I have some news for you? I'm an old Borland guy. You might not know who Borland is. You may have heard of Turbo Pascal back in the days, but they went on to write something called Delphi, which is something called it's a rapid application development tool. Basically, you got all the little tools, buttons, bars, scroll bars, everything that you need to be able just to, in minutes, push an app together visually and then click on it and add the code, and you can interface with shared libraries and stuff, so you can bring in C code and whatnot. There was a knockoff of the Delphi. I worked on the Delphi program. I was one of the guys here at Portland. There was a knockoff of that that was done using the free Pascal, and it's called Lazarus, and it's gaining a lot of popularity in the past few years. There's a gentleman that took Lazarus and was able to make a interface between Lazarus, the RAD development tool, and Libertine, and is able to punch out applications just like in seconds, to be able to build applications, custom applications, visual applications, and put them on that Ubuntu Touch phone.
Yeah, I think I did actually read something about this on OMD Ubuntu before. It'll be like another way to make apps for Ubuntu Touch or possibly other platforms as well. But it wouldn't be quite native as in native, and it wouldn't be the web apps, but it would be like another way to make apps, basically.
These aren't web apps. These are native on the phone, real executables that run like bat out of hell. This is native code and native GL code and the like. It is fast, and responsive as all get out. And I'm getting ready to get together with him to work together on this. I see it as the one call as savior from Google taking over the planet, which is why it was kind of sad about the state of the Ubuntu phone. I'm going to be the only person on the planet, I feel like, that's going to have one of these phones and the full application development tool and be able to punch out apps right, left, and center, and worried that this is not going to go anywhere. But you've given me a lot of hope, because this guy knows who I am. I used to be on the development team of the tool that he's using that's a knockoff of it. And between the two of us, we could push something together for this thing.
Who's giving you hope? I've given you hope, is what he said.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to bear with me. I'm hard of hearing since the past 7 years. I can't hear hard. Can you repeat?
Yeah, who gave you hope? I gave you hope, is that what he said? I gave you hope.
Yes, yeah, your news of the phone, hang in there a couple of years, keep looking at it. You had a lot of information that I didn't have. I haven't had time to digest or look or dig up or anything.
It's the phone and tablet's interesting because, well, I think with the phone you have to kind of add on Libertine yourself, which it can be done, but it's not really there. But the tablet came with that by default, which is interesting. And a few default programs, Firefox, LibreOffice, GIMP, and de-edit. But what I think is interesting is how the desktop is going to converge and all that remotely personal, which I was just talking about. So really, the tablet Ubuntu Touch is basically a preview of the future, of what's to come with the desktop as well, pretty much what's to come. And that's exactly what I said to somebody the other day in the IRC. I said, who couldn't get Ubuntu Touch on this particular phone because there's no port. But I was like, if you put Unity 8 on the desktop and then you put Libertine in there yourself and various apps, then you basically have what's on the tablet anyway on your computer. And also if you've got a touch screen, and it will show people what's come. But the Unity 8 by default in the Ubuntu 16.10 is very basic. It doesn't have much installed by default from what I've seen on YouTube, actually, because I haven't.
I am way excited because I can bring apps to this platform. And no, in short order too.
I'm not sure how Lazarus would work quite, but I mean, there's the official Ubuntu store where the official apps go that are okay, perfectly okay with their security policy, etc. And then there's also like a separate open store or something where there's a few apps that go in there that would break some of the security issues, but people have to be able to install, obviously, with Lazarus onto the devices really easily and any of the apps. I'm not sure how that would work, but
well, I know that he's building and compiling and running those apps. They're native. I was able to get the free Pascal installed on my little phone and build essentials, you know, C tools and all that. And I was amazed at what I was able to get to go on that phone and get it to run on the first day. And
the Ubuntu phone or the...
Yeah, well, it's a Nexus 4 with Ubuntu Touch on it.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much the same thing anyway. It's just a port to the Nexus 4, but that's the one they started, I think, developing with anyway. So that's the old one they used to all use before there was an Ubuntu commercial devices.
It's unfortunate they dropped support for the Nexus 10, because I have one of those sitting around that, since Nexus 10 is not getting much in the way of Android updates, it'd be nice to be able to toss another OS on it, so putting a Ubuntu Touch on there would be great.
I agree with you.
Well, yeah, it means Ubuntu Touch or Celebrus or KDE Plasma maybe, but that's not really going anywhere, I think. Somebody mentioned it just now.
I get the idea that the KDE Plasma is not going anywhere. It's kind of a shame. It's really pretty.
Yeah, I know. It looks great on the website, but then you get back to, hang on, how do I run this? Oh, I can't. I don't have a Nexus 4 or a Nexus anything. And then you're back to, I can't really run this then, or not now. I have thought about buying maybe a really cheap Nexus 4 off eBay or something, you know, secondhand, because it'll be really cheap now, isn't it? The old one. And then you can put some other things on there, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think that the KDE people have the financial backing to make something like that really work. But I think that the Ubuntu, I think, does.
Yeah. I think Plasma may have actually been based on Ubuntu Touch as well. But, Chronicle have, well, they got some sort of funding, and that's in their interest to converge all these things together, like which I was talking about, because that's how they're going to potentially make profit as well in the future, especially when more devices are being sold. I would have thought they've got more deals with various hardware partners. I mean, only BQ and Meizu are only to start, but there'll be other hardware manufacturers who will come on board and actually ship device in the future if they can just sort these things out enough that I was talking about, this whole conversion of everything together. Once that's done, I think more companies will think, oh, we might actually try Ubuntu Touch on those commercial. And also if it can run more apps as well, because that's another issue that Ubuntu Touch, if you look on the internet, various articles will say that Ubuntu Touch is good, but it lacks apps. It doesn't have... It can't run all these mainstream sort of Android apps and iOS apps that people think they want, and that's a sort of a downside. at the moment, but then again, it isn't, depending on how you look at it and who's supposed to be running these devices anyway at the moment. But to go mainstream, it needs to have enough apps of some sort and good quality, be they Android, iOS, or Lazarus, or whatever it needs apps. That's because I go into the Ubuntu App Store and I can go through every single section very quickly because there aren't really that many apps in there. And that's the official App Store, and that's a shame as well, really.
I think that's one of the interesting points of this Lazarus bridge, I want to call it, to the Ubuntu Touch system. Delphi, which is what Lazarus is basically a knockoff of, is a great environment for building mobile apps on Android and iOS, and you could take the same code and build it for either or. You'll be able to take that same code and dump it into Lazarus, compile it, and push it out on an Ubuntu phone, meaning you can take your same code and build an app for iOS, for Android, and for Ubuntu Touch and push it out. That makes it an ideal platform, development platform, that makes it an ideal tool for a developer.
Well, yeah, I mean, cross-platform is good. And for developers, it should be easy for them because you just make for one and one thing and it will run on everything. But but Android can then take advantage of this as well, and it's already got all these apps and iOS even. But yeah, cross-platform generally is a good thing. Look at Firefox, for example. You know, just in general, how it. Okay, it's not as quite as popular as it once was because of Chrome, but my point is, you know, it got pretty popular, and that's also because it runs on different platforms.
Well, I'm excited. It's not bad. I agree on the Nexus 10. I've got one sitting here. I've been nuking paving devices, trying to get Android off them, and I'll take almost anything I can get. I don't know what I'm going to do with the 10, but the 7, I think Touch is coming to it.
Well, there's a UB ports. I mean, technically they've stopped officially supporting the 7 as well. There's a UB ports website. I can put a link to it in the chat.
Yeah,
in a second.
Yeah.
Did they stop support on the 7?
Officially, the middle of 2014. I was just looking at it. But UB ports is a project that's trying to get Ubuntu Touch on as many different devices as possible. And it's about 90% there on the 10 and the 7. For the 10, specifically for me, since that's what I've been playing with, the one thing it's missing that I would like it to have is Bluetooth support so I can actually use a proper keyboard
with it. Yeah, UB ports. So, it's got support for Nexus, OnePlus One, and some other things, but it doesn't all 100% work. But the idea is to port it to different devices unofficially. However, I can't remember what this.
You
there's something else to do with UB ports. This is interesting to know. I read about it on OMG Ubuntu, of course, but probably about a month ago now, and he was going to crowdfund. He wanted to. There was an idea to crowdfund. There was a video from the Ubuntu event, UBCon, where he's been talking about this, and he was going to crowdfund some sort of device that would do. Something interesting, and I can't remember what it was now, but there was something he was going to crowdfund, potentially the UB ports person, and it would make convergence, that's what it was, it would make convergence a lot easier or better with the Ubuntu devices. I think that was the idea, some sort of device that would be cheap, and he was going to possibly crowdfund it, or try and get it crowdfunded.
Oh my, I'm there, I found it. Oh, they got an Nexus 5.
I think UB Ports is only really one guy, maybe two guys now, and that's how small it is in reality. So it's kind of amazing. It's amazing all the work he's actually done on these ports.
Nexus 7, OnePlus One. Oh, in the realm of DigitalOcean, these guys need support.
Well, he has incorporated some crowdfunding to it. I think there's a Patreon account tied to this.
This is nice. This is great information. This is very good information. Thank you so much.
One other debate, though, there's a guy from my Linux user group who I used to think, you know, was really into Ubuntu, and he fixes people's computers as well, and you know, one of those kind of guys. But he always came across somebody who liked Ubuntu, Then when I showed him my Ubuntu phone and a little tablet, he was always a bit like, oh, I don't know, Ubuntu Touch, it doesn't really work so well. Android's better, and Android seems to sort of work a bit better. And then he sort of thinks that Ubuntu isn't Touch isn't as good as it should be by now. But I think it's very good for what it is in reality when you follow the projects enough. But the debate here as well is that he was a bit like, oh, I don't know, I'm not so keen on Ubuntu now. I don't really want the same interface on everything, Unity 8 on the tablet and all the rest of it, which is the goal of convergence. So he's actually switched to KDE Neon, I think, as his distro recently. But that's a debate there as well, if that's really the right path to go, because the Unity 8 is more mobile styled interface. And if you're going to run that on your desktop computer with a mouse and keyboard as well, you know, if that's really a good idea or not. And because Apple have the same interface on things as well, and Windows tried that. I think that the general debate is if you should have a mobile interface or something more mobile styled on the desktop computer as well or not. And I think it's fine. That's the future. That's sort of where things are going, but not everybody does. And you can still have different interfaces, but do you think it's a good idea to sort of put the same interface on everything, like they're trying to do with Ubuntu, and they've sort of done with Apple, and Windows have done it as well, really, I guess? Or do you think we should have more choices, or we should be like, oh, this is a desktop interface, if you see my question?
I see your question, and I'm inclined to not have homogeneity between devices, because I interact with my phone or my tablet in a very specific and markedly different way than I do with my desktop machine. Now, that said, fewer people are using desktops or your laptops for that matter. So it's not so much convergence as it is replacement, in my opinion. But I think there's for working on a desktop versus working on a phone, by the constraints of the hardware itself, they require different UI paradigms.
Yeah, I think that's sort of it, isn't it? That, like, oh, now I'm using a desktop, so this sort of more mobile, even GNOME Shell, you could put under that, I suppose. You could say, oh, it's not quite what I want. It's not so great on the desktop sometimes because so I need a more classic styled interface. But that's sort of debate. But actually, sort of a side topic, but I've just thought of it again. I read very recently that LibreOffice are actually, in their next big update, which is coming soon, they're going to give people interface choices. It was called, I can't remember what it was actually called. I read this on AMD Ubuntu, but there's going to be like a ribbon-styled interface, like Microsoft Office. There's going to be something more classic-styled, and there's going to be four interfaces, and people can choose from the settings which interface they want, which is probably really good what they're doing now, because they're not doing the one interface fits all approach, actually giving people four options of interface.
Yeah, and I think that's a necessity because they've been trying to get LibreOffice to work on mobile devices, tablets, and whatnot. And the existing LibreOffice interface, which I've used on Android with a couple of the LibreOffice ports, is not great for a touch interface. And so, yeah, I think having different choices that are specific to a device or a workflow are good. I'm not particularly jazzed about the ribbon interface as implemented in MS Office, but maybe the LibreOffice team will learn from Microsoft's UI team's mistakes there.
Yeah, that's LibreOffice, but whereas a Chronicle with Ubuntu, obviously doing the one interface fits all approach, because it's all going to go Unity 8. That's the plan. Be on any device with a screen. Okay, you can put your other KDE in there and stuff, but by default, you know, it's going to be Unity 8 eventually, and that's it on all those devices, all those computers. And
yeah, and I think that's, I don't want to say this where it sounds like I'm being too disparaging, but it is classic sort of programmer thinking is have one interface, because you only have to maintain one interface, right? You're only doing development for one thing, and if everybody uses that one thing, then you could support a bunch of different devices for a single interface. And from a programmatic standpoint, from a development standpoint, that's way easier to maintain and way easier to work with. But from actual working with it on the user land side of things, user interfaces need to be tailored to the devices that people are using. And I think it's a mistake to try to have complete homogeneity in that regard.
I think I agree with that. I mean, that's basically it, probably, partly. If you have one interface, in the case of Chronicle, they also then have Mer on the background, but that's a side thing. But if they control it, one interface and it's on everything, it's going to be easier to maintain. But as a user, you might want different types of interface, depending on device.
I'm kind of divided on this.
I mean, that's also what abstraction's for, right? So from a programming standpoint, if you can abstract your underpinnings enough, then not to overly trivialize it, but you're just slapping new skin on it based on whatever device you're using, whatever setup it is. But again, it's still a different block of code that has to be maintained. So I understand the hesitance, but if you're going to do it right, then my opinion is that you have to have different interfaces, and so you have to have proper abstraction. But the downside of proper abstraction is that can entail some overhead, and if you're trying to go on mobile devices, then the overhead of abstraction could ruin performance. So it's engineering. Everything's a trade-off.
Unfortunately, the one thing that we're missing in the year 2017 is the one thing that they killed when Apple took over Steve Jobs' Next system, which was a device-independent display system. He used Display PostScript, but make that job a lot easier.
But yeah, this guy I was talking about, he seems to strongly... I think he's so opinionated that he wants a desktop interface on a desktop computer that Unity 8 isn't good enough, so he's going to end up using something else like KD Neon or whatever. But I guess that's the thing with Linux as well, is that, you know, so opinionated anyway in general. That's just one guy I was talking about, but you know, everyone has different opinions, and that's why we end up with all these interfaces and distros and all the rest of it in the first place, because no one ever completely agrees with each other in that sense.
Agreed.
Fragmentation sucks.
Well, it's called fragmentation, isn't it? But actually, I call that choice. If you've got all these different distros and all these different interfaces and all these different browsers and graphics programs and all the rest of it, then, well, that's choice, really, isn't it?
Well, that's a good take on it.
Good is difficult. and I think fragmentation is good. It's just difficult.
There you go. It's one thing that sometimes it angers me, and other times I'm pleased by it. So,
I mean, without fragmentation, I wouldn't be running Enlightenment with my very wacky personalized setup. That works great for me, but I wouldn't recommend necessarily using it. Anyone else using my specific configuration?
Agreed. It'll be interesting to see where all this goes.
I've seen Enlightenment as mainly being a sort of a toy interface, more of a sort of a toy flashy effect thing. But I guess that's not quite the case. Then it can be actually more lightweight, more usable, and all that.
Yeah, it hasn't been a toy interface since probably about E15, E13 era, where it was really, really heavy on the eye candy. But even then, it was pretty performant because it was all handled on software. But it's really a working set. And with that, my children have come and told me that they're awake, so I have to go make breakfast for them. So I'll talk to you guys later.
Good talking to you.
Yeah, good talking to you.
Yep, I'll see you guys around IRC for sure, and probably
I'm not sure how long this will be actually going on for much longer, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, I'm just talking general IRC. I tend to hang out in the Outcast Planet channel pretty regularly, so.
But yeah, it's IRC.
All right. Good morning, folks.
All right. And with that, I may be going too. I think I've got something to finish my backups with.
Yeah, I think I've done this for long enough as well. I think this is basically over now because there's no one else on, but that's how it goes. That's fine. Officially, there's been, I make it sort of 2 hours and a half after show.
Oh.
And there were some, obviously, bits where no one was chatting, but it's been going on 2 hours and a half after the time. So that's actually quite reasonable.
Thank you so much for that info on the phone, too.
Wait, what, the just general direction of Ubuntu Touch?
Yeah, that brightened my day.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opinion out there, like, oh, it's not really going anywhere, or it's not going to be this, or it's not going to be that, but I don't agree with that at all. I've chatted to developers. What I didn't say is I've actually met, because I've done Brussels the last, since 2012 for FOSDEM. I actually got to meet, I went to Ubuntu talks last year there as well. And one of which was about announcing the tablet that was going to come at that time. It was not official just yet. But I knew on IRC that a tablet was coming already. And they were talking there, and you see some of the general direction. I got to meet Mark Shuttleworth, in fact, after one of those speeches briefly. That was good. I met Mark Shuttleworth.
Wow.
I got to, I talked to him briefly and shook hands with me, and yeah. He was asking the questions for one of the speakers, and there's videos of these speeches up on there actually. I asked questions as well. But one of the guys doing a speech, he's like one of the main developers of, well, he does Libertine, I think, so. When you go to something like that as well, or you see something like that, you can, I think that's partly it as well. You sort of see where they're going and you sort of get the feel of things, and like, yeah, Ubuntu Touch is definitely going somewhere. It's just taking time sort of thing. And the IRC as well, and it's open source, isn't it? You know, all these great people you can get in contact with and sometimes meet as well and find out about all these great projects that are being worked on. But it just all takes time for something to develop. Enough.
Yeah, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. I just hope it doesn't get dropped. It seems.
I don't think it's going to get dropped. Well, it's going to get dropped when they go to Ubuntu Personal, but I talked about that earlier. That's just a convergence of everything together. But in the sense of the, you know, the tablet and the phone being dropped, I don't think so. I think they're going to keep going on that for. Yeah, a long time. I mean, look at the desktop Ubuntu. That's been around since 2004. You know, October 2004 was their first release on the desktop. And now it's 2017, and they've had, you know, so many releases. And if you look at history, there have been other players who tried to go more mainstream that failed or lost the market. Sandros, Mandriva, Linspire, probably a few other ones as well. But Ubuntu has been around as sort of the most popular distro ever since 2004. So I think it's just going to keep on going until Linux is not relevant anymore, basically, unless something really goes wrong with Unity or something when they converge stuff together. But I don't see them sort of disappearing. And I think they'll carry on with the phone and tablet and whatever is going to potentially make them money as well, because they are commercial. It's a community and a commercial company. And the commercial company wants to make money. They're going to make money if they can sell enough, get enough of those tablets and phones sold in the future. That's how I see it anyway.
I think that there's a big market that will develop for non-Google solution to mobile.
Yeah, and Google, and that's it as well. I think Android's a bit, it works, it's okay. It's got Linux in there as well in the background, but it's common. It also sort of ties people to Google by Google Play and all that. And it's good to have choices. I mean, I've got even some of these choices are Android based that are good as well. Remix OS and things like that. But actual more proper alternative choices, Ubuntu Touch, Telefis. Shame about Firefox OS really that they basically gave up on that. But it's good to have choices. That's how I see it. I don't like the idea of there just being one or two platforms or whatever. And I like choice in general for anything. I mean, you know, you go to a shop and all you had to eat was two food options or something. You know, it's good to have choice, isn't it?
Well, to be honest, I get a good peek of what's going on the privacy scene and the security scene on Android. And I'm not pleased at what I see. Well, I understand that there's a little Android running underneath the hood of Touch, but that's okay. It's just some driver stuff mainly.
Yeah, there's that as well. When I tried Android out, probably really popular Samsung Galaxy S3 Mini, to be honest. So that's only a few years ago. But what I noticed is the apps, you've installed an app and they want to have access to everything, basically. That doesn't seem very secure to me. Well, apparently they've got better security settings in more recent versions. But yeah, security, privacy, and how you install one app and basically do everything with your phone, that doesn't seem secure to me. And that's what Android was like.
I did a deep dive into what was going on my mobile devices. Deep dive into what was going on the privacy front. And it's got me wiping my devices. My wife, to put it into a nutshell, I'm a technical guy. I know this stuff. My wife's friends are not techies, and they don't know this stuff. But my wife came to me over the weekend. She says, all my friends have left Facebook for this other MeWe or something that is a privacy protection thing, social network. And they've left Facebook over privacy issues, data mining and stuff. It clicked to them what was going on. And they don't really understand what's going on. I understand that Google wants to look at everything. They want to see where you are. They want to know that you're driving through the what I call the burger whopper. And they can change, eventually, if they're not right now, eventually they can change the price on the menu, or they can change what's presented on the menu, because they know you're sitting in front of it and they know who you are. Even the podcast layers on Android and iOS, they're listening to what you're listening to, and they're creating a database. They're listening to what you're listening to, when you're listening to it, and they're selling the information. And all this is coming back, and it's biting, and it's biting hard. And people are starting to realize that they may pay a different price at the store. The coupons that get presented to them are different. Their shopping experiences are different based on who they are and where they're coming in from. I originally started using Google because they were a good search engine, because I was a developer. And when I typed in XYZ technology, it gave me developer information. And I was happy with that. Today, when I type in something, it gives me, they want to sell me stuff. I don't get technical information anymore. My search has changed, you know, and it's changed based on where I log in from, where I'm at, all sorts of factors that are going on. I looked at my devices, and I looked at all these little apps, and I looked at what they were reporting back and sending back. I started looking at the packets. I started stripping the SSL. I started doing all kinds of stuff. I wireshark'd the hell out of this place, and I'm not happy. I'm not happy about it at all. I'm realizing that they're listening to everything that I say. They're recording. Some of these apps are taking pictures when they think I'm not looking. It's crazy what is going on. I'm ready to move on to a system that I can trust. Now, I'm not sure that the app store from Ubuntu is going to be any better, and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to trust it either. But I would trust the phone, and I would trust well-vetted apps.
Right, so I've got 2 points then. So, yeah, first of all, the whole security privacy thing. I think that, if the apps have too much control, they could put the camera on or something when you don't know, and all the same with any operating system, and then Google are like Facebook, you know, and probably Twitter to some extent as well. Information, even if it's just general information, it kind of sells. It's a database. They kind of want that info anyway, because they can maybe make money off it, or they can do whatever with it.
They can sell the money to your insurance company and tell them what you're buying at the grocery store, and they can price your health insurance.
Well, yeah,
you probably don't deal with that because you all have a different health insurance, but I can tell you that's what's going on here, and that is what's going on here. You know, they are looking at what you're buying. They are pricing your insurance different.
Well, yeah, it's like the cookies on the computer, isn't it? You know, you go on certain websites, you get a cookie, and then things get together, and you get certain adverts coming up, and targeted advertising, and all this, yeah.
Yeah, and even the podcast stats that you're getting, they're not interested in it from an advertising standpoint. They're interested in it in tracking you. Where are you listening to podcasts? Where are you at while you're listening to that podcast? Oh, you're driving through the Kentucky Fried Chicken. You know, they want to know that. They want to change the menu at the Kentucky Fried Chicken as you drive through. You know, it's all about the information and tracking. And there's a lot of money to be made on it and a lot of money on these metrics. And people are slowly starting to figure out what's going on. And they're not liking it. As my wife said, my non-tech friends are moving off of Facebook because they've started to figure out what's going on with Facebook. And it's more than just, you know, there's a lot of intense mining going on. And they're not happy with what they're seeing, you know, what that really means. And they're starting to figure it out. And they're leaving. And I think that there are people that are going to see Google as the same thing. That they aren't this beautiful little colored alphabet company, but really that's the evil empire. They're behind all this tracking. That's what they're built on. And no, they're going to want to leave. And they're going to want to leave to something else. And what else is there to leave? Well, you can't leave to Apple. They're as bad. You know, iOS isn't going to get you any further. But Ubuntu Touch, maybe so. You know,
well, yeah, Apple will want it. Apple want information as well, Microsoft. As for if you can trust the... I mean, Conical, I was going to say earlier, is, I mean, even Conical, you know, you can and can't trust them all. That's what people say. I mean, they had some issues with the some of their own privacy issues in the past. But for example, the Amazon thing in the Unity that dash, which is now being removed. There was it was sent results to Amazon, and there's a whole debate about if that should have been in there and all that. Little things like that, nothing so major. But in that sense, you sort of can you trust Conical? Not, are they okay? I would say generally that you can trust Conical, and or enough, because it's I mean, a lot of people who work there from the community as well. But it's not just that; just generally, they probably can be trusted mostly for the most part. But regarding malicious app, there's only really one that's been known about so far for Ubuntu Touch, or potential malicious app that got in there, and that's quite a good story in itself. So must have been last year. Oh no, 2017. I guess 2015 then. 2015. This happened because I went to the Old Camp event, and Alan Pope or Popey did a speech about it. Even he's one of the main Ubuntu people. Who works Conical. But basically, there was a malicious app that got into the Ubuntu App Store, and it changed the boot up screen on the BQ devices and the Mizu. And it basically say at the bottom, instead of saying powered by Ubuntu, it would say powered by Logan Lam, who, if you look it up, is apparently a computer cracker or something like that, Black Hat or somebody, you know. And the app was called Test, and it got into the App Store, and about 20 people actually installed it or something like that, because they got some statistics on how many people have downloaded the app. And it was called Test, and no one really knew quite what it would have done, or it was probably just a proof of that you can put something malicious in there. It was quite clever because it was basically two apps in one. It was an app that looked generally to all the checking of apps, combined with another app which then did these changes, and that's how it kind of fooled the checking. But they've learnt from that, and I believe they've fixed the whole error how it kind of got through. And but that's like the only malicious, potentially malicious Ubuntu Touch app that there has been so far that's known about anyway. They contacted the 20 people who had downloaded it and sort of said, oh, you might want to refresh your phone or whatever happened as well.
I think that there's a good possibility for I think a Ubuntu stands, Canonical stands a good choice because they're reasonably trusted. The OS is open source, and as long as that stays that way, and there's going to be people that are going to say, well, okay, maybe I don't want to use the store, or maybe I want to use this other store. Maybe I want to get my apps from somewhere. There might be somebody like me who I'm saying, I don't want any of that stuff. I honestly, I look at the Ubuntu Touch as it's installed and saying, I don't want most of this stuff. You know, I don't want a weather app. I don't want, I made a list of this stuff. Well, I actually try to take it out.
By default, there isn't going to be that much app there, really. I mean, there wasn't even an email client.
There's really only a couple.
For quite a while by default, but they put that in. You get a nice OS by default with Ubuntu Touch. Then if you want more apps, you can do that.
It's nice. I think I've installed everything that they will let me, but I'm not sure that it actually takes it out. Got the messaging app and the contacts app, and I'm suspicious. Got a browser. The gallery makes me a little. I understand. I've got to have some pictures there. File manager makes me a little suspicious, just because of the drive by.
Have you got an Ubuntu Touch device then?
I'm sorry.
Have you got an Ubuntu Touch device or not?
I've got one right in front of me in my hand right now.
Which one?
I've got a Nexus 4.
Nexus 4 with Ubuntu Touch. You probably said earlier, right? Yeah.
But when I that's one of the problems. People say, "Well, is Ubuntu Touch, or is it an Ubuntu phone?" And then you've got the real Ubuntu phones, and then you've got the operating system you can stick on like a Nexus or something. I've got the Ubuntu Touch operating system, if I said that right, on a Nexus 4, and then I've got KDE Plasma running on a Nexus 5. I have taken off the weather app, but I think it's still there. I think it's just a web app.
It's a bit of a side, it's kind of off topic, but it's kind of relevant still, sort of. It's an interesting little story in a way. When I got my first Ubuntu Touch, the commercial Ubuntu Touch device, the BQ Curious 4.5, so last year, no, 2015 now, 2015. It was alright. It was Ubuntu Touch has improved. And I'll say something else about that one, but what I noticed is when that came in sort of April 2015, it was like, oh, I can't clear my browser history. Why can't I clear my browser history? That was that. And also there's an option in the settings: do not report your crash reports to Canonical. And if you went and disabled that, it would enable it and send the crash report to Canonical anyway. There was like a bug. They fixed that. And then I ended up thinking I lost that phone as well. I remember talking about on the New Year's thing last time around that I lost that phone and no, it turned up. But because it turned up around 9 months later, I actually keep that one intentionally on the old version for now, because you can sort of see progress when you're updating your other devices. But with the privacy setting, it was a bit like you were meant to be able to disable it, but then it would enable it, and you kind of wonder, was this intentional, or was it really just a bug? Because, that's the kind of thing I'm not so keen on as well, where anything wants to send the crash report off somewhere else, because you sort of think, what's it going to send in the crash report?
Yeah. And then mine's got something nobody else's has got. Kind of interesting. I got a video player on here that nobody else has got, supporting some file formats, audio formats that the original phone doesn't.
Which video player is that?
I'm sorry?
Which video player is that?
It supports some MKV files that I custom made. It took a day to build it. I built it on the phone, the source code. I built it on the phone. It took almost a day for it to compile. It's a video player that's got some enhanced video formats and audio formats. I just built it as a test. I've also got a PDF viewer on here that nobody else in the world has. That took over a day to build it, too, and I built it on the phone. And then I copied a couple of apps from that I built. I'm going to say I built them on a Raspberry Pi and pushed them over there to the phone and ran them. And they were GUI apps, but they ran just fine. ARM 7 node. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's all you need, really, anyways. Nexus 4 with Ubuntu Touch on it, and then, yes, you could make apps for Ubuntu Touch.
Yeah, I can make my own apps all day long. I can build my own file managers. I can build my own contact thing. I can build everything and do it in nothing flat with this, with Lazarus. You know, I can go to town and I can build my own apps and know that they're secure and feel all warm and fuzzy about that. And then I could put them out on the internet and say, hey, here's open source apps for Ubuntu Touch. And, you know, if you're really worried about security, here's the source code. Take a look, compile it. You can build it yourself. Just go down, download Free Pascal, put it on your phone, build it.
Lazarus, you said there was another guy working on that as well, but is it actually out there now? So if I want to run Lazarus myself, for example, can I do that or not at the moment?
I'm sorry, can you say that just a little slower? I'm really hard of hearing. I'm sorry.
You said that there was another guy working on Lazarus as well. But if I want to run Lazarus myself at the moment, can I just do that? Can I download it or run it or
yeah, not? Yeah, yeah. I can give you a link to this guy's site. He's got the interface to Libertine. He's got that worked out for Lazarus, and he's downloaded Lazarus onto his phone, and he is literally building and compiling the apps on the phone, on a Nexus phone.
And it should work on any of the Ubuntu touch devices.
Yeah, yeah.
And the apps, so what are the actual apps that are being compiled? I thought you said there were web apps earlier, or are they actual more...
No, these are native apps. This is native code, 100% native code. This is not web app-y kind of stuff. This is the real deal.
For Ubuntu Touch, for Lazarus?
Yes.
Wait, which? Lazarus or Ubuntu Touch?
Well, it's Lazarus. He's got it running under Ubuntu Touch. Lazarus runs on a variety of operating systems like, you know, x86, ARM, you know, iOS, you name it. And I've lost my mouse.
Right, I see. So you make the apps for Lazarus, but Lazarus itself will run on various different platforms.
Right. Lazarus is a UI, a GUI on top of Free Pascal. And with that, you can build native compiled code, and you can interface it with like C code, native C code, and shared libraries. And Rocks, why is my mouse not working? Wrong mouse.
Yeah, I think I might have read about it somewhere, but yeah, I mean, people need to know about Lazarus, obviously, in general, because if you can run all these apps and so on, then that's exactly what's needed. And not just an Ubuntu Touch, but I suppose even Telefist OS, because well, it can run Android apps, but, you know, they need more kind of more native apps as well. Or something's more native, anyway.
Well, the thing maybe is, there's guys Windows like phone. Me. There we go, my mouse is back up. Sorry, it connects underneath my desk and I kicked it. What this guy has, with Lazarus, you got guys like me that have, you know, 30 years of code sitting here. Applications, and they can build applications to do almost anything that you'd want in nothing flat, and then push it over to the Ubuntu phone. We could fill up a app store in nothing flat with native code for good quality apps. I mean, like I've got one on my Ubuntu phone right now. It plays videos that I know your phone can play.
Yeah, but that's...
I built that myself. He's got a game too that he did.
That's one of the issues with Ubuntu Touch currently, or is really, and that maybe I guess Lazarus could help solve this issue then. But the issue basically is that, and a lot of people think this as well, is that I mean the operating system, that's all right, that's good, but the app situation, it's like, can you run Android apps now, which I talked about earlier? But in the native apps, when you look at what's actually in the Ubuntu store, about half of those apps that come up in the official Ubuntu store, not this separate Ubuntu store where you've got some other apps, but they're mostly web apps. They're not really high quality, good apps. And people want good quality, high quality apps.
This guy's got apps he's building for this phone on a Ubuntu Touch. We got videos showing long, long videos of showing, putting Lazarus, the whole development environment, dropping buttons and whatnot. He's compiled several apps, a game. It's what this guy's doing is amazing. And his name's Chris Maldowitz. We got to hook up on, you and I need to hook up on Google. This guy's got, he's got it together, man. I'm telling you, I'm impressed. And I'm one of the original, part of the development team of the compiler system that they knocked off. Well, like I'm one of the original guys from the Delphi team at Borland. I don't know if you've ever heard of Turbo Pascal and Delphi, but.
No. But, yeah, I mean, Ubuntu Touch, Zoo App Store, Liberty Involved, Exmo, XOR programs and all that. In the case of Solarfish, though, what they do there is they got that Android compatibility, well, two programs, like Aptoid, and they've got Solarfish OS. They've got Aptoid for installing Android apps from an unofficial store, where you got the Yola store there, officially.
Yeah, I saw
anyway.
That they were able they've to got, do...
They've got Yandex or something as well. And they got Yandex for Android apps again. They've got the native apps in their store. There's not that many apps there. Native Solarfish OS apps from what I know about. And then they've got... And then there's also ways to get Google Play running on Yolo. It seems that with Yolo phones, that a lot of people just run Android apps on there, which kind of defeats the whole running native app debate. But again, the point, but they have a kind of advantage there because you can find Android app. Tizen, they have a compatibility. Samsung Tizen, they've got. You have to install on that. Can run Android apps for a bit, but it's all about apps, see, which is what we're talking about. Lazarus. So if you can have, so yeah, Lazarus. More people know about that. I would like my Ubuntu tablet to run a lot more stuff, to be honest. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very positive. I'm very, very much impressed with what this guy's done. I've been just trying to clear off my desk so that I could get together with him and get this going, because I'm interested from the security side of the thing. I want to ditch Google from the privacy side. I want to ditch the apps from the security and privacy side. And been talking, the only way I think I can do this is open source apps for the Ubuntu system, like Ubuntu Touch, is really the only way you know, to do this.
Yeah, it needs to be open source, ideally. The apps need to be secure, privacy respecting as well, that's important. And I know there are, you know, probably various people out there I've come across a few on IOC, you know, as well. People who are like, oh, Google Android sort of okay, but it doesn't really do privacy properly, and I would like to have something more privacy respecting, more secure. And that's, I think that's generally what they're trying to do with these open source platforms, Ubuntu Touch, Solarfish OS, and things like that. But then you go back to the whole app thing. Oh, can it run this? Can I run that app? And that needs a kind of solution that's secure, privacy respecting, and where you can suddenly run all these good quality programs. And I thought you said that Lazarus can also run old, well, you said something about 30 years of code and how you can port over with Lazarus an old program and make that run or something, I think you were saying.
Is that a question?
At the end, that was a question, because you said something about 30 years of code, an old program, and then Lazarus. And I think you said you could run the old program on Lazarus as well.
What, you're going to have to excuse me. I got ill 7 years ago with something that our American doctors can't seem to figure out what it is, but it's caused me to go deaf. I hear you said something about taking my 30 years of code and Lazarus and.
Yeah, I don't know. You said something earlier about something about Lazarus, and you said there was an old program, 30 years of code, or something like that, and I'm just saying, I'm asking if you can run these really old programs via Lazarus as well.
Yeah, I can tell you, I've got 30 years worth of programs that I've written that for Delphi and Lazarus that I could port over to Ubuntu phone and have it running, have these things running in nothing flat. And as I said, I could fill up a store in short order, and so could others. It's not just me. There's a lot of developers out there that have written a lot of great apps. They have a lot of
That's what's needed, but I would say that's what's the sort of thing that is needed for Ubuntu Touch, but also, yes, security, privacy specs and all that, but importantly, it needs to be kind of done the official or official enough canonical way so that it could even be there by default. You know, you get been installed Ubuntu Touch, you got Lazarus there by default. If you can get that done officially, then, like you're saying, then I think that would be probably quite ideal, really.
That'd be really nice if it could do that, yeah. I don't see a reason why it couldn't.
Well, it's probably some policy or something, you know, like, oh, you're going to have this officially in Ubuntu Touch. This is the way to do it. This is how you have to do it. Or something like that. Because, there's a separate unofficial app store as well, which I mentioned before, which gets a few more apps that aren't as priority respecting or for some reason break the official Ubuntu Touch policy. And so people who really want those apps can still have them, but they have to install the unofficial store and then they have to install the app from that. And I don't think there's that much in there, but there's enough. Some of the interesting stuff has gone in there, and that's not really ideal.
Yeah. I think he's actually planning on doing some sort of store on that. I don't know. He's got a really, really interesting blog. I've been watching him. I've been watching what he's doing. I'm about one of about probably three people in the world watching this, and it's amazing. What this guy has managed to do is amazing, and I know what it means. He knows what it means, and there's probably one other person on the planet that's watching that knows what this means. He's compiling apps, got video, the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. You on Google Plus, G Plus?
No, I don't really use Google Plus. I've got an account, a Google account, obviously, but
this is worth you seeing. I think he's got a Ubuntu Touch on screen keyboard pack. Got a game doing containers. Got a blog on taking the same code and natively compiling it for Linux, Mac, iOS, BSD, and Ubuntu Touch. Well, that's amazing. I've just been trying to clear off my desk long enough to clear off my desk enough for us to sit down. We're supposed to sit down after the first of the year. I guess it's the first of the year. I'm excited. Did I lose you?
Hello, Mr. Father. That's it, unless we keep this thing live.
Warren said.
Wait, what was that?
I said morning.
Afternoon here now, but yeah.
I didn't think anyone would actually still be on right now.
No, I nearly went off it. but I still had it open, so. No, I just finished chatting to Joe about 50 minutes ago, I think. What are you doing then?
Currently making coffee and breakfast and all that fun stuff.
What mobile phone stuff?
What's that?
What mobile phone stuff?
No, I said I'm making coffee and breakfast and all that stuff.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
I'll be right back. Alrighty.
Yeah. One of the previous years, I kept this going, the aftershow going for a very long time. But probably not going to do that this time.
I remember, I don't know if it was last year or a couple years ago, where it was still going for like, on January 2nd, I believe.
Yeah, it was, and it was because of me, mostly probably actually, because I just kept on going. There's people join, leave, join, chat a bit more, get another one, and it kept on going for a very long time. But for me, it was about 16 hours after the thing had ended. I'm not sure when they're going to actually release this stuff, but eventually, I guess. I mean, the after shareable chat still there.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was typing an IRC there.
I don't know when they're going to release the after-show stuff, but eventually, I guess, and then the other one's probably scheduled.
I went to bed last night at about 2 a.m., hopped off the show at midnight, and hop back on now.
Yeah, but that's, well, I got to sleep about, I think it was about 1, 2 UK time, and then I woke up around 8 and then came back on this about 9 in the morning, so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I should have specified that I'm using a different NIC, because this is the one I usually use for, like, tilts and stuff, so.
Oh, right, yeah, I wouldn't have known. I haven't really done this for a year anyway, so. But, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But what would you call peg roll with one and then this one with that one, though?
Honestly, because I forgot to back up my Mumbo certificate. So, yeah.
I could just pretty much log in and use this on this laptop, but that's because I haven't really... I was going to, like, factory reset... Well, I'm going to do a whole reset of OS's very soon on here, now that I've found my Windows 10, Windows 8 USB, the official one that I've actually bought. And I'm going to reinstall Windows, reinstall Linux distros, and put some Linux distros on in the first place, actually. But it meant the mumble was just pretty much went straight in from my year, my name from last time. I got virus something in Windows, I believe. So yeah.
I haven't actually ran Windows in like 12 years now.
Yeah, I mean it's good to go Linux only, but on occasion there might be a program or some sort of, or you buy a new computer that has Windows on it or something like that, you know. And so at least vaguely run it sometimes. But in general, I would keep far away from it and not run it. But on occasion, like I'm saying, you might for some sort of reason.
Until I discovered Darktable, I thought I was going to need to run Windows to use, like, Lightroom or something.
To use what?
Lightroom.
Did you say Darktable as well? What did you say?
Darktable.
What's that?
It's the free open source Linux raw processor for photos and stuff.
Oh, right. Well, I don't use that, but okay. Oh yeah, got Windows is great. I'm being sarcastic here, but I bought this mini PC, like a Deep Sea Win, it's called. You can look that up. It's like it looks like a Nintendo disc. It's more for gaming. If you might have had the Pyro and Open Mandora and all that stuff as well, so it's a bit like that. But there was a GPC Win with a keyboard and Windows 10 by default, because it's on a 5-inch, it's on a small screen, you get a perfectly genuine Windows 10 version on there by default for free. And I set it up, there's a Windows installer. I mean, I bought this because I wanted, it's like a mini PC, a desktop PC in your pocket, powerful as a 2010 computer. And I did mention this here earlier, but anyway, Windows lasted only not very long at all on there before it had gone wrong, because I'd done a factory reset and there was like a bug that basically corrupted it. So after sort of, and I put Linux on there anyway, and it sort of works, except for the wireless, because the hardware wasn't really designed for that. It was a bit annoying. But yeah, I got another little computer to play around with as well. That's good fun, or going to be.
I had to help a friend fix her grandma's computer recently, and I forgot that if you just install Windows, you get pretty much just bare bones Windows, like all the drivers and stuff. It is an absolute pain to install all the drivers you need and everything like that, because I'm used to just installing something and just going, oh hey, there's the hardware, yep, got it.
Yeah exactly, that's basically it with Windows. And that's actually shows how impressive Linux was on this GPC Win, because it was designed to run Windows. It's a Windows device, really. Yes, you can run Linux. It was crowdfunded. I didn't crowdfund at the time. I bought it from a Chinese site afterwards for more. But anyway, you can run Linux on there, but it was never really intended to run Linux on there. So that's what is a bit, no one really quite knew. I remember reading all the comments as it's being crowdfunded as well, but considering that this thing was never meant to actually really, was never designed to run Linux, it actually runs really well, because the touchscreen works pretty much straight out of the box. Well, it works out of the box. The various things I've tried in Ubuntu just seem to work. The sound doesn't work. You could do it with a headset, but it doesn't just work through. The game controls, work the rotation. I can rotate it, and but there's a command that puts it the right way around for the image. But and the wireless doesn't just work because it's got a Broadcom wireless in there. But other than those things, it actually seems to work quite well with Linux, with Ubuntu. I put Ubuntu 16.04 on it, and but there are ways to get the other things working, I believe, anyway. But the point is, by default, even on that, on a brand new mini PC from 2016, it just mostly works. And that's Linux. That's how impressive it is, isn't it?
I haven't actually had Linux audio issues in quite a long time.
Yeah, but it's the hardware of this device. It runs a bit different hardware to some extent from what you would normally have on a normal computer, because it's not a normal computer, it's a like a portable gaming console type thing with a keyboard on there as well. It's worth a look up, actually. GPD Win. There was GPD XD where it was all for gaming or emulation. That was with Android as well. It's about it. But yeah, generally Linux just mostly works, except for UEFI potentially. There's a laptop I wanted to Linux the other week, a few weeks ago, and of course, UEFI issues again, and I don't know what. There's HP, that one as well, but that's the annoying thing now, is we'll deal with UEFI. But other than that, Linux mostly generally just works without too much problem these days.
The only thing I've really had issue with hardware-wise is the trackpad in my laptop. It's a Alps trackpad, I think that's what it is. And when I first got it, I could only do like one finger anything. Like it wouldn't register one side of it as being able to scroll or nothing. Like anytime you touched it, it would register it as a tap, and then it would move the cursor.
Yeah, well, yes, yeah, things like that. But yeah, it's like, but again, back to your earlier point, Windows hardly supports anything at all by default. Driver-wise, hardware-wise, hence why you got all these drivers in the first place, and also, you know, the various programs that they would just take for granted in Linux, like a full LibreOffice, and you get an Office trial from an OEM or something, but, you know, hardly any programs are actually put in Windows by default as well, whereas Linux distros, we get probably quite a bit more by default in general.
I'll be right back, my coffee's done.
Are you still here, or did you just go away? Hello, Joe. Are you Joe from Mario or another one?
Was that him?
No, I was chatting to Joe about half an hour ago, but I think you're a different one.
That would be correct. Half an hour ago, I was asleep.
Say that again?
Half an hour ago, I was asleep.
You're another Joe, yeah. Were you on this at the actual New Year thing?
Say again?
Were you on this on the actual New Year show?
I logged on right after midnight today.
Sorry, say that again?
I logged on right after midnight today for a little while.
Yeah, because this is now the after show or whatever.
So then, no, I wasn't a part of the New Year's show.
And this is now the after show or whatever, so this will eventually get released as well, I believe. Where are you from? America, I guess?
What gave it away, the accent?
Well, not really. It's, well, partly maybe, but no, but most of the people on here are from America, so it's kind of, it's quite likely.
No, I'm from Texas, I guess you could say. I've been here for the past 17 years, but before that, I was in Iowa. Before that, I was in Georgia. Before that, I was in Germany. Before that, I was in Oklahoma. Before that, Alaska. I've also spent some time in Korea and Kuwait and Iraq.
Okay. Actually, where am I from?
Your mother.
Still here?
Alright, now here. Soon my breakfast will be done.
Right, okay.
Morning.
Afternoon.
Where'd everybody go?
Small around again now.
Hey, there you go. There's Siva. Hello.
Who is Siva?
Siva is my number one admin over at Tux Bytes Linux. He also hangs out with me over at Open Linux Community.
Oh.
And he's a really cool dude from Florida. Which means he's on the same time zone as me.
Well, yeah. Well, he's not suddenly been up. Anyway, so, Pegwell, are you back yet? Or Mr. whatever you called him here?
Sure am.
Right, so the goal is to have a 72-hour after show. 72 hours.
You're a madman. I'm down.
Hey, what's that in the background? Somebody doing the vacuuming?
How long do you think... Well, this could go on for ages if people actually chatted.
It's either a vacuum or your computer sound.
What, me?
Okay, now I think it's gone.
Yeah, someone was vacuuming.
Might have been my computer, the laptop fan or something.
Oh, I was curious, guys. On your computers, in the BIOS, how do you have the fan set? Do you have the fan set to always on or the other way?
Depends on what I'm using the computer for. I mean, my garage computer tends to always have the fans on, so I just go in the BIOS and set it that way.
But it's not going to hurt if you got it set to always on, will it?
Well, naturally, your fans are going to wear out a little bit quicker. The bearings are going to go quicker, but fans are easy to get, so...
I mean, also, it takes quite a long time to wear out a little fan like that.
And, of course, it's a little bit more of a bitch to replace a fan in a laptop. Yeah, if you're working on a desktop, they got those so easy to take apart nowadays, it's not even funny. All you got is snaps on them.
1, 2, 3.
4, 5, 6.
7, 8, 9, 10.
10 through 12.
A, B, C.
D, E, F.
G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P.
Purple, orange, squiggly line.
Squiggly what line?
Squiggly.
Ah, yellow, white, straight line.
Okay, tell me a joke.
Joke.
My life.
Hey, how do you keep an elephant from stampeding? Cut off a stampeder. What do you call a sissy in the deep south? A homosexual. What is a sardine? A sardine's a little fish that smells like a finger. Just some old Red Fox jokes.
Might close down for the rest of the day, so it depends. Who's still here?
I am.
Why aren't we chatting about something actual?
Because I'm eating and I don't want to sit here and smack into the mic.
Say that again?
So because I'm eating and I don't want to sit here and, you know, smack my lips into the microphone.
Is anybody excited about CES?
Excited about what?
CES, Consumer Electronics Showcase.
I don't know anything about it.
You're not familiar with CES?
Unfortunately, no.
CNET usually has really good coverage of CES. Hack5 sometimes has really good coverage of CES. I'm not sure if Leo Laporte's going to cover it this year.
Joe, your mic is really low. I can hardly hear you.
All right, give me a few minutes. I'll switch to one of the other ones.
Say, I'm going to go back to Open Linux Community. It was really nice spending time with you guys. I'll see you all later. Anyhow, that's where I'm going in case anybody wants to follow me. See y'all later.
See ya.
Joe, did you go to the gym yet?
Yeah, I've been once or twice. Once or twice. It's been a busy week, so not as much as I would have liked. Oh, do you mean today?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, I'm not a big fan of January at the gym.
You don't want to see all the New Year, New Me people?
Not really.
Joe's still really quiet.
Yeah, I'm pulling out my other mic. We're packing stuff up right now because we're driving from El Paso to Dallas.
5150 lit up, I think. Is he back from the sleep?
Apparently so.
Morning, 50.
Morning. I had to dig out a pair of analog headphones. The USB ones are done for now. Not only are they out of charge, but sometime during the whole thing, and this was before I went to sleep, the left-hand, or rather right-hand side can, you know, came completely loose from the whole mechanism, you know, other than just dangling by a wire. So, you know, two little tiny little screws that Logitech put in there pulled out. So I'm going to have to either get new ones or try to drill all the way through and hold it together with a bolt.
That's why I only really buy analog one.
Is that better?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it probably didn't help that apparently I tried to wear them to bed, so, you know, because I found them in the bed with me this morning.
Yeah, I've ruined plenty of headphones that way, because I'll put them on to watch, like, a movie or something on my phone as I lay there in bed, and I'll just drift off to sleep and wake up, and I'm tangled in them.
Right, this has got boring. I think I'll have to bumble down a bit. Or maybe not. Is anyone actually here still?
Mm-hmm.
Still here.
Why did you say we were... Well, there's nothing to chat about, I guess, that's all.
I brought up CES, but nobody knew what I was talking about.
Well, Joe, do you actually go to CES, or are you just looking to see the reports of what new stuff comes out of there?
I just watch for the new electronics coming out of there. The TVs, the computers, the drones sometimes.
Oh, CES. Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't so far away, etc., from here, then yes, I would possibly go to that myself. But Las Vegas is rather far from here.
I've always lived relatively close to it, but you need an invite if you're going to go for more than just the Sunday show.
One of these days I'm actually going to go. Like, I would love to go to CES and Photokina.
You just need to show up at the door and say, look, do you know who I am?
I'm sure that'll work really, really well. Do you know who I am? No, me either. I have amnesia. Okay, wish we were saying that it's time to shut it down.
Alright. Oh, I'm getting a little bit yelled at by the wife because I need to help finish packing up the car. So
who was saying that? Me? Or, I was saying I might go off this in a bit. That's what I was saying.
I mean, the official show here. I guess then we start the after show. Also, Joe, please don't get yelled at and possibly murdered. I enjoy talking to you on occasion there.
Well, it appears it's a good thing that when we all got together and said, yeah, let's do the New Year's Eve show again, I took absolutely no responsibility for anything, so I don't have to do the editing when it's done.
Yeah, that's Honky Magoo's job this time.
So what are you two planning on doing the rest of the day?
Nothing.
Probably going back to sleep a little while and feed cattle, pay some bills.
Sitting on the podcast for another 10 hours, Peckle. Even if no one's actually on it.
If no one's actually on it, I'll probably just head out.
I think this is it now, really. You know, just us left, and that's probably about it, really. So we might pop in later, but so it'll be over by then.
Well, in that case, it looks like it's Netflix for me.
No, it's later here. I've been doing this. I've had. Somehow it ends up being sort of 4 hours and 80 minutes past the end of the other thing, so it's quite well already.
Nope, if I don't see you anytime soon, I'll see you next year.
Well, I mean, I'll go to the RFC channel sometimes. As well. And 50 want me to record a show about the Remix IO and the Remix IO Plus when I get those.
I'll have to give that a listen.
I haven't actually recorded this show at all yet. Proper show. Maybe this year I will. Depends.
Yeah, it looks like, and pointing right at myself, we didn't do a very good job of filling in the Etherpad with what we were talking about all day long.
Oh, well.
Hope you kids have fun. I'm going to hop off here and go about my day.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same. It's time to get off this, really. So that's pretty much... I guess this is the end of the after thing, really, I guess.
Time to call it a show.
Unless 50 wants to keep it live for 10 hours on his own.
No, I think I've had enough. It at the beginning and now at the end, it didn't get as much in the middle as I would have liked, but yeah, I think it's time to call it.
What was that about the middle?
Oh, I didn't get as much participation in the middle as I usually do.
No, but there's there'll be a, well, there was some after show and there's some stuff to listen to, get other people's chat, and that's the point really, isn't it?
Well, later, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Later.
Okay, the end, I guess, then. Up to after show.
Greetings, you guys still here?
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.